This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied. It's fine.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. I produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was that?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the Big Buzz play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I didn't mean my shock wall.
Is that the Shock Master's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Biggie, also known as the Bon Appetit. Rappers can't sleep, need sleeping. Big keep creeping, bullets heat seeking. Casualties need treating, dumb rappers need teaching.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And, Scott, we're taking a break from the Vintage Vaults. And that's because of a couple reasons. One, we have a very special guest joining us tonight. And two, you've been summoned to Raw, right, Grumpy Cat?
Yes. Yes, if my face was permanently like that, I don't know what I'd do. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 345 of The Mothership. I'm stunned that we actually have a cat. Well, tonight, of course, Raw is taped because it was earlier today in England, which means nothing will happen. So, yeah, I'm stunned by that. I can't wrap my head around the fact that a special guest star of a major wrestling show is an animal, and not like one with a, you know, like the bunny.
Still better than George Steele. I'd rather have Grumpy Cat. But we'll talk about that.
You know what? Grumpy Cat will team with somebody else, and just as they're the number one contenders for the tag belts, Lou Albano will come back from the dead, manage them for the tag titles.
So. Well, we'll talk more about that in a bit with our guests. So, and our guest will be Scott Keith, as it's another mailbag episode here. Something we always look forward to. I believe this is our fourth. Yep. So, Scott, it was a pleasure seeing you this weekend. Did you enjoy your trip here?
As always, I always enjoy getting to see you, JR. I don't get to see you as often as I'd like, but I feel like I've seen you a lot this fall. Usually don't see you between September and Thanksgiving weekend, but this time I did. Had a blast. Got to see a lot of people hadn't seen in a while. Got to see Adam Murray, of course, co-host of the great Hoops podcast with Andrew Reich. It was nice to see him.
Yeah, a lot of boneheads.
Yeah. Quite a bit of boneheads. Love the, for our guy Matt, great job as always. Love the Thai chili. That was actually a great flavor. I never had that before. And, of course, usuals, Cowboys from Hell and Wrong Side of the Road. Right? Is that what it? Wrong Side of the Road? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wrong Side of the Road and Down on the Farm. If you're in West Warwick or you're in the surrounding towns, stop in.
Or it's even awesome. Just in New England. I mean, it's worth the drive.
Really.
Boneheads
if you're
wings.
In Maine, take the drive. You're not going to find better wings anywhere else. They're fantastic.
Washington Street in West Warwick.
And the fantastic burger, which our good friend Mr. Josh Richer had, the Landslide, which has the... mac and cheese bites on it, along with the bacon, and you had it. You partook of it last week, and
it was delicious.
It was quite delicious. And Josh, who I didn't realize likes his meat like mooing, like like my mother and my sister do, but looked like a delicious burger. So again, we can't enough tout the great boneheads. So.
Right, definitely check it out if you're in the area, Main Street, Washington Street, rather, West Warwick, Rhode Island, Bonehead Wing Bar. So, PlaceToBeNation.com, Scott, also awesome. We had a nice piece by Kyle Fitta today examining the WWE's Road to Survivor Series, kind of where they stand as a promotion right now, looking at sort of what ails them and are things, you know, shaping up for a pretty good free pay-per-view here coming up in November. All the rage on the internet right now, Scott, is the greatest song of the 90s tournament here at PTVN. 640 songs have made this tournament. We have 10 songs up per day. You pick five to move on, and once we get through that 640, we'll head on to round two. We are into Group G today, so why don't we take a minute here? Why don't we do our Group G picks, and then maybe when Scott joins us, we can have him do one. So let's take a look here. What was up today? All right, we have A Name by the Goo Goo Dolls, Smells Like Teen Spirits by Nirvana, Creep by TLC, All I Want by Offspring, Don't Walk Away by Jade, No 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 by Destiny's Child, Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth, I've done some of them before, Linger by the Cranberries, Cream by Wu-Tang Clan, and Better Man by Pearl Jam. So what shall our combined five be here to give our cast our team vote?
Okay. I think we should vote for, I think we have to. We should vote for Nirvana. It's probably a heavy favorite at the moment.
We'll give that. If I could pick one here, I'd like to pick the Wu-Tang Clan Cream.
I like that song. Even though, now, you and I talked about the difference between voting a song that you like and voting a song that deserves a vote. In this case, for me, it's the Cranberries, Linger. That's one of those songs that when I was in college, our college station played it literally every, like, 35 minutes. So I just got so sick of it. But it is probably a memorable song of that first four years of the decade. So I'd have to put Linger by the Cranberries.
I can feel that. Let's also go with, I believe, TLC Creep is a big one. That should be on
and personal pick, because I like almost everything from them, I got to go with Offspring, All I Want. I always like that song.
So yeah, this is where we're going to differ now. I mean, I feel like Pearl Jam's got a lot of entries, I believe, coming. So we can hold off on them for this one.
Yeah, that's not one of my favorites anyway. So
Smash
Mouth?
I'd prefer Destiny's Child. I like that song, but I think Smash Mouth, that was their biggest hit. I think they're very representative of the 90s. I think the Offspring has better songs.
They do have better songs. I agree.
I would go Smash Mouth for my fifth.
Okay, that's cool. I like that. I like Destiny too, but again, that's not one of my favorites. Right, so there's others too.
Nirvana comfortably in first.
Yes.
Four of the five ones we just voted for are in the top five. Only Wu-Tang is outside the top five, and Pearl Jam is in there, not a surprise. So continue to vote each and every day. The turnout has been awesome so far. We've really enjoyed all the banter that it's brought on, all the conversation, all the arguments. And like I said, we'll definitely do this again later with Scott Keith when he joins us. We'll have to explain to him that Nickelback's not in this thing, but I'm sure he'll get over it. New episode of The Extra Point. Scott, you were joined by The Good Doctor and TJ McClune talking NFL Week 10, College Football Armageddon Weekend. And even some NHL as well. We have a new episode of The Bauer Show. New installment of the PWO PTBN Roundtable, looking at WWE.com's top 50 heels in wrestling history with your good friend Will, Johnny Sorrow, Parv, and Stephen Graham doing part two of breaking down that list. I heard there's some nice things to say about Triple H.
Well,
if you're a Triple H fan, head over and check that out.
Well, two of the three had nice things to say about Triple H. The other one just bitched. Anyway.
We have the Best of Titans of Wrestling Volume 1. If you've heard some things about that podcast, you want to get to know a little bit more about it, go ahead and check this out. It has all their best bits. New episode of the Wrestling Culture Podcast as well, with Dylan and Dave looking at John Cena. Interesting take there. Also, new episode of the Still Real to Us podcast. The High Spot with Glenn and Steve looked at Dean Ambrose, the WWE Network UK nonsense and tomfoolery that happened at the end of last week, and the other top stories of the week as well. The Seinfeld PTBN series rewatch, heading towards the end of season three very soon here. We looked at the suicide, and up on Tuesday morning, we'll be doing the Subway. So it's me, Andy Flanagan, Jordan Duncan, and Aaron George. Crystal Maxwell doing something similar with Friends each and every Friday. She has that piece up. Greg Phillips and Nick Duke nerded out, Scott. They did a giant size to Hard Traveling Fanboys doing a P2B fantasy comics draft. So they brought together some of their other fellow comic book aficionados and did a full draft. So a very cool piece there for you comic fans. New installment of the Sports Lounge. Talked about the Steelers. Gave out some midseason NFL awards and some coaching hot seat discussion as well. TJ and Todd's tailgate previewed what ended up being a crazy weekend in college football. Scott, our Vintage Vault refresh. We looked at Royal Rumble 1989 each and every Thursday. This week we have WrestleMania 5 going up. And the Cowboy went to class, looked at Saturday Night's Main Event from 10/31/85, of course.
You better enjoy that, Cowboy.
Sloppy pig. So PlaySimulation.com has all that you need, all that could you want, besides another baby. And, of course, you can hit us up at info@PlaySimulation.com, Facebook.com/PlaySimulation, and Twitter, Place2BNation. So, Scott, why don't we go ahead and bring in our very special guest? And that special guest is with us here, making, a lot of appearances he's had here at the Place to Be podcast. This is, I believe, the fourth time He'll be doing a mailbag with us, and that is, of course, the one and only, the great Scott Keith. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Good to have you back, Scotty.
Great to have you here, and I'm going to take a moment right off the bat so I don't forget to thank you, as always, for your support of the site over at your blog, rspwfaq.com. So we thank you for that.
No problem.
All right. So what we usually do here, this concept show, again, this is the fourth time we've done this, is Scott has an infinite mailbag with questions and questions and questions from all his readers and fans. And Scott, we threw a thread up on our Facebook page as well. We got about maybe about a couple dozen questions ourselves. So we're going to alternate back and forth from our questions and Scott's questions, and we'll give our answers. We'll chat a little bit. We'll tell some funnies. We'll have some laughs. We'll cry a bit as Darren Sproles keeps racking up touchdowns. Scott Keith will have a quizzical look at his face as we discuss that, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more wrestling. So, Mr. Keith, since we usually start off on our end, why don't we flip it around and go into your mailbag first, and we'll maybe do like three questions, then we'll switch over.
Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, obviously the talk of the blog today has, in fact, been the Grumpy Cat guest star
yes.
announcement of Raw, which I actually was emailed a press release about, but... We'll try to ignore that and move on to some other stuff, I think. Because really, how much more can we discuss that without going crazy?
Well, Scott Criscolo is our own grumpy cat here at Place to Be Nation, so we have one every week on our show.
But I smile while doing it. My face isn't permanently grumped.
That's true. You're not permanently
I can be grumpy and smile.
I will say this. If for what they want to be, it probably makes all the sense in the world. For what they should be, it's the fucking dumbest idea I've ever heard. It's this weird dichotomy, right? So, because I was at the gym tonight, and Entertainment Tonight was on one of the TVs, and they had a segment on this stupid grumpy cat. And I'm like, this is what they want, right? They want to be this company that makes Entertainment Tonight. They want to have grumpy cat cover it. Like, they're, you know what? This is what they want, and I guess they're doing the right thing. But for what a wrestling company should be doing, for what their target fan base wants, this is a complete 180 from the direction they should be going.
Well, I mean, and the worst thing, too, is, you know, I'm watching the network and all their self-filating Monday Night Wars bullshit. And, like, the point they make over and over again is, you know, well, 1995 was terrible. We were a bunch of idiots and we're putting out clowns and garbage men and stuff that no rational human being would ever want. And you know, now today, this is exactly what they're going back to now, you know, like Muppets and Grumpy Cat hosting because they want to have a fun time for the kids on the TV and everything like that. It's like, and this is Triple H who's pitching this stuff now. Like, this is the guy who was, you know, firing cannons at WCW's offices and back in 98, right? Like, it blows my mind that they're so out of touch with themselves. That
I kind of think the Grumpy Cat is Stephanie's idea.
Well, either way.
I mean, when do they say, you know what, all the kids we marketed to back in the late 2000s are getting a little bit older now, kind of like we were in 90, 91, where we were kind of getting fed up with the direction of where they were going and then into the mid-90s. When do they finally hit that point where, I'm not saying go attitude, I'm not begging for all that kind of stuff, but at some point you have to mature the product a little bit if you want to keep some of this fan base, or do you just keep recycling and going for kids and kids and kids coming up? You know, because with the network... Yeah, you're reaching out to the older fans that are nostalgic, but you're also reaching out to the fans that may have grown up in the early 2000s and mid-2000s and later 2000s and maybe were John Cena fans at first and you know, grew out of it, and maybe that's nostalgia for them. So even the network could even reach out to them. So it is surprising to me that they're keeping it so geared towards kids when kids don't have the disposable income to buy the network and their parents aren't and probably going to buy it unless their parents were wrestling fans, which I guess is what they're hoping. But with what they're... product is geared to nowadays, and that is selling the network and pushing the network, it's beyond me why they aren't switching directions towards a little bit more mature product and away from this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and the crazy thing is that, you know, John Cena has been on top for close to 10 years now, so that the very kids that he was supposed to have been appealing to in the first place are basically going to end up being teenagers by this point.
Yep, just like Hogan in the 80s.
Yeah, just like Hogan, exactly. So it's just the lack of self-awareness is just, I don't know, mind-blowing for this. As they were saying on Wrestling Observer Radio last week, and they were talking about the network numbers, and it's like last year Dave thought that there was absolutely no way that WWE would ever lose money, and yet here we are, and they're you know, down you know, $15 or $20 million this year already. So, you know, you can, where there's a will, there's a way, right?
Right. Mm. And I'm on board with the idea of the network. Like I mean I think it'd be really stupid to jump ship and bail on it now, because I do think they're actually out in front of the future of this kind of stuff. I think bailing now would be really kind of a stupid idea. As much fun of, you know, the XFL we all make, I think a lot of the things they would do in the XFL eventually bore themselves out in the NFL. So I feel like sometimes they're actually ahead of the curve, and the problem is they pull the plug because they don't have the patience to see it through. And I'm hoping one of the byproducts of what is looking to be a questionable decision, putting the pay-per-views on the network, is that they're forced to stick with it. Because I think if they stick with it, and finally, eventually they have to get their head out of their ass or stumble into something, I would think. Mm. I think bailing now would be the wrong move, or even bailing within the next year. I think they need to see how far TV goes and how many more products and you know, entities go towards this model and method, which I think they're headed that way anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the USA deal runs for, you know, what is it, another 4 or 5 years as it is. So, I mean, they have that kind of guaranteed money there. So as long as they can keep cutting costs to the point where they can make money on their 700,000 subscriptions, then, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely they're going to stick with it for at least that long, because they have guaranteed cash flow.
Right.
And, like, you know, the idea, obviously, is that in the future they can eliminate the TV rights as well and just, you know, do everything on the network. And, hey, if so, great. And if not, then I'm sure they'll re-sign with USA for another disappointing deal and keep cutting costs that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways they can go with things. I hope this is one that they stay the course and just see it through, because I think there's still a ton of potential. And for all the people that are, you know, and I see it on your blog every day, all the people who say they're canceling or not going back, you know, I think they will come back. I've never seen anyone say they're done for good with it. I've seen a lot of people say when, you know, or I'll come back for the Rumble, or I'll come back for Mania, or if the product gets better, or if this gets uploaded to the live. So I think there is things they can do to regain some of that subscribership that they lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, I say I'm never coming back, like, all the time, and I come back for the Rumble or WrestleMania every year. So, hey, you know, right. who am I to criticize anybody for this, right? But
right.
Yeah, no, I mean, people in my blog say the same thing every week, right? You know, they're done with Raw, and they're never coming back again.
And then they're chatting about it a week later.
And they're all chatting about it either. They're all chatting about it right now, in fact. We can, I can pop in there right now and grab some questions off there, I'm sure, too.
But even if they're justified in walking away, even if they're saying there's nothing there for me and I hate the current product, as soon as it's hot or they put something up that interests them, they will be back. So that's why I think WWE would be really stupid to pull the plugs. I think there's a lot they could do to turn this around. I don't think it's a one and done opportunity for them. You know, if they pull up the next hot act or the next big star, or they do tweak the product to be more friendly to an older audience, or if they upload all the Attitude Era Raws and Nitros, which people want, you know, whatever it is, whatever that key is, I think they have it at their fingertips. It's just a matter of them fumbling around and finding it.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, it doesn't matter what they upload for archive content. That's just for grumpy old farts like me. But what's going to turn it around is having a hot product, right? Yeah. Like, it's, you know, if the current product gets hot, then the network will follow from there. And, you know, it's just I'm of course the extreme case, because, you know, I'm going to subscribe to it no matter what,
right?
Just because I'm the kind of guy to go through and review Raw and Nitro chronologically one at a time, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's, you know, it's. For the common fan, it's going to be more like coming up with things like they did last Monday night with you know, the U.S. title change.
And I love that idea. I thought it was a great idea.
Network. Yeah, that was, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they should do more often on the network. Right. Like, you know, like think outside the box like that. Do like the Robin Hood match from Nitro and that kind of stuff. Because like I said in the blog, I mean, we're wrestling fans. We know the deal. Like we put up with this bullshit before. Like that's exactly the kind of thing that we'll complain about, and then we'll keep watching anyway, right? So like, they absolutely should use every cheap carny trick in the book to get people to tune into the network.
You know what they could do too? I mean, if they check out their viewer numbers and they gather some information on you know, how things skew, what the average age is of their viewers on the network, why not do a more adult themed show on the network? Like it'll, like Shotgun Saturday Night, how that aired late on Saturday nights and it was a little more edgier than what they had going on TV. Why not do that on the network? Say, hey, Friday night, come check this out. We're going to have hardcore match. We're going to have this, that, and you make it a little bit edgier. And maybe that appeals to fans, because I feel like they have been getting a little more ballsy. Like, I thought we've seen blood a little bit more lately here and there, and even a little bit more language has been a little edgier. So I feel like they kind of know But I think the network is there for them to do stuff like that, like have that U.S. title match or have a different show that may appeal. Maybe they do that Cruiserweight show that they talked about where it's a network-only show.
Yeah, well, they just upload a shitload of ECW, too. So
right,
just,
so I'm not doing now?
Yeah. So I'm just browsing through the, now, through the network right now, and
now
there's
it's
another
funny,
60 episodes.
Yeah, now it's funny. I read a story yesterday that they had just come up with this ECW idea, like, within
48 hours.
Yeah, 48 hours of...
Before
now, I don't know if that's
it.
Totally true, because I kind of being in the know, I saw promos being encoded for it like last Wednesday, so I don't know if that's totally true or not.
Yeah, well, they said it was 48 hours before they announced it. They came
before they announced it. Okay, yeah.
Not before it started.
Now, the big problem, we're going to discuss this in much more detail on this week's episode of The Main Event. The problem is, and I've been saying this all along, is that the network is being run, the network part of the product is being run by people that aren't wrestling fans.
Right.
And everybody used to complain for years that you can't have wrestling fans as like bookers because they'll only book stuff they like. And, you know, everybody pissed and moaned about soap opera writers and all that stuff. Fine. You want to have a mix of writing of wrestling fans and non-wrestling fans for the live product itself. Fine. But the network is for the fan. So don't have some schmuck who hasn't watched anything ever going, I really think we need more Total Divas on during the day.
See, I kind of disagree with you a little bit. It's for the fan, but it's a hybrid because it's their lifeblood. This isn't 24/7. If it was that, I'd agree with you 100%, 1,000% that should have been completely programmed by wrestling nerd fans like they have run on the website. Like, to me, that is the fan entity. The network is like the future of their company, so you can't lose, and I think Keith mentioned this a minute ago, you can't lose that that blend. You know, the hardcore nerd fans like us want to see all the pay-per-views, want to see old WCCW and all that stuff, but they still need to make it an appeal to the younger fans, to the newer fans. I don't give a shit about that because you're not going to make that money off the off the old school fans like us.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, for as much as I'm never going to watch Total Divas, it absolutely should be on the network just because it's cheap and easy programming. Same thing, they should dump all those shitty WWE movies on there too. Like, why not? I don't understand why. Like, it's there might be somebody who wants to buy it, and hey, there's another 10,000 subscriptions, right? Like,
right.
You know, it doesn't cost them anything.
Right, exactly. They already have it all.
Yeah.
I think the other problem is they need to start using the stream more for live stuff. I mean, really the only hook that people have had with the stream so far is the live NXT pay-per-views or pay-per-view type shows.
And I think part of the problem too is that when stuff goes on the stream, it is also archived immediately, which kind of takes away the desire to use the stream, right? Because you can just go to the archive anytime. So maybe they should have like a 24-hour delay or a 48-hour delay before new content goes into the database.
I mean, they re-air the thing like five times. The day after pay-per-views, it's literally on four times in a row.
Yeah.
So, but I couldn't. I mean, for instance, they were in England. They're in England right now. Why not do like a Saturday afternoon pay-per-view type old school Capital Carnage, insurrection kind of thing at like, let's see, what is it, 6 hours ahead? So 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Try and hook the fans in on a Saturday afternoon in the wintertime. Weather's going to be kind of crappy. Have a pay-per-view, like SummerSlam 92. Back then they were able to get away with it because there was no internet. Couldn't do that now for regular pay-per-views. But now that you can go to other countries, you can have an insurrection or a rebellion or whatever, and use the thread that way. You guys are right. You can't just dump like every non-wrestling show. I agree with that. But I think if you're going to hook in diehards, which is a decent, probably a higher percentage chunk than casuals, I think you need to skew the thread towards stuff that's, I mean, during the day is different because who's really watching it during the day? I mean, I have no choice because it's one of our clients. But
I would say there's a majority of the target audience of who would watch that stuff probably is watching during the day.
Yeah, well, probably. Yeah, I would say, for the most part. But, it's the stream is the key. Archive's archive. Stuff's all going to be there. Nothing's been yanked. So the archive's just going to be there. That's not the issue. I think the stream is where the.
No, I think it's just everything. I don't think it matters where it is, where it lives, what time it airs. I think, if what people want to see is there, it doesn't matter how it's produced for them. I think as long as it's there and they want to see it, then it'll draw. Do you agree, Keith?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I actually ended up seeking out Superstars the other day too because I heard a bunch of buzz on there was a segment with Ryback still on it. where they had a reunion, I guess, and it's really interesting. It was actually it was the kind of thing that you wouldn't expect from them because it felt very organic and hands off. Just because Superstores is the kind of show now where they just, you know, they're obviously Vince McMahon is not there micromanaging it, and that's the kind of thing that they should be putting in there, I think, as well. It's just they basically had their makeup and breakup where they're. You know, Ryback was telling him how he read some books on politics, and they had a laugh about it and joked that they'd get back together and then lose to another tag team kind of thing. And it was really neat. Made me want to go. You know, as a wrestling fan, it was neat to have that there. That I didn't have to go cruising through YouTube to find anything like that. Right, I could just go to the network and seek it out. So I think that's another kind of thing that they should, you know, just little. Off the cuff content that they're throwing it on there as well, I think.
Absolutely. All right, so let's take a breather from the network talk, Scott. So let's dive into your mailbag and go with the first question in there.
Okay, finally getting onto there. Okay, so this is about WWF acknowledging success in other places. Person asks, much has been made about how the WWF long ignored the fact that any other promotion existed. They dealt with Harley Race's storied career rather haphazardly and basically ignored JYD's massive previous success. So was Ric Flair's introduction the first where they just couldn't bring him in without completely acknowledging that there was competition? And, so that was 91. Even then, they weren't really acknowledging that there was competition. I mean, they kind of made a joke out of the whole thing And Vince, of course, had to change something about the guy, right? Like, they couldn't call him the Nature Boy, so they took that away from him and had to put their own kind of stamp on him with that one, at least. I think Harley Race, they did kind of acknowledge it, unless I'm grossly mistaken on it.
I don't really remember them acknowledging it totally. Ric Flair was just like, you weren't supposed to think that the belt was the former WCW or NWA world title belt, that he just made it up himself and just carries it around like almost like the $1 million belt. That's kind of what they went with in 91. Like, you weren't supposed to know that it was the former NWA world title, that it was some belt like the $1 million belt that Flair invented. So, but Harley, I don't think so.
I mean, they weren't like with Harley, they weren't called, you know, it wasn't like a Carlos Colon look at that youngster type of
boy.
Like, you know, but it's, you know, because they were somewhat kind of acknowledging his previous success and played off of that with the King of Wrestling kind of deal thing there as well. I mean, certainly not to the degree that, you know, it was with Flair where he was treated like a big deal when he first came in.
I think a lot of times he did it early in the guy's run and then they didn't talk about it afterwards. So generally, I feel like they would do it in his first couple matches or in any vignettes and then they would taper it off. So maybe when Harley first debuted, they said, oh, you know, former champion from around the world, handsome Harley Race, blah, blah, blah. And then a couple weeks later, they just kind of forget about it and he becomes a king. Because they kind of did that with Colonel Mustafa.
Yeah.
Remember, they acknowledged him as Iron Sheik for a few weeks and then they stopped.
I want to say Kerry Von Erich, too.
They made him
as a big deal.
There was a couple more, too, they did that with. I'm drawing a blank right now, but I know I heard it recently just watching these older shows on the network and stuff where they would. It's almost like it catches you off guard because you just assume they never talked about this stuff. But in the first couple of weeks to build a guy up, they did, and then they would quickly move away from it. So it's like the early introduction just to kind of get him over, and then they WWF-ize him.
Yeah, definitely not during the 80s, though. I think that was definitely something during the 90s once business started to drop and Vince really had no choice but to kind of acknowledge that there was a world outside of the WWF as well. Because, I mean, especially with like, you know, big name ones like Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff and that kind of thing, Roddy Piper was like an entirely different person. Like, there was no acknowledgement that he was anything beforehand, and that would have been one where you would think they would have brought something up, or even like all the big jumps from the AWA, or even like Hogan himself, where basically he came in. It's like, okay, yeah, he was a big deal before, but that was in WWF. That wasn't, you know, we're not talking so much about, you know, his run in the AWA or anything like that. So I think definitely that was something where Vince's hand was forced by the early 90s rather than something where he saw the light or anything like that.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, JYD, at that stage, depending on how old you were, I mean, like, when I became a fan, when JYD came in, I was like 11 years old, and I don't remember anything about Mid-South or any of that kind of stuff. I don't think at that point anybody, he already seemed so larger than life when he came to the WWF that I don't think that mattered. Like, he was already really hot as a character, so and older fans, particularly older WWF fans, really didn't watch much of anything else. It was very, very territorial back then, it seemed to me. So I think Harley, I agree, was the first one. Now, Harley and, you know what it is, Scott? Harley and Dusty were those two cases where they were in the twilight of their careers. They came here because they could get paid pretty well just to kind of, you know, get a little extra scratch at the end of their careers. I don't think they really even cared whether they were acknowledged or not. You know what I mean? Yeah. KYD came and he was red hot, but at that point I feel like, again, fans didn't know anything about, I didn't know anything about Mid-South in 1980. I don't know where the hell they were. The only, I vaguely remember NWA because I watched on Saturday nights, and I remember AWA on ESPN. That was pretty much it. I'd never heard Mid-South in my life at that point.
Yeah, when I came in 86, yeah, I mean, JYD was, it was literally just WWF that I knew him from, like, you know, when the feud with Harley Race and stuff, but, and of course, Rock and Wrestling.
So, when do we feel that stopped? Like, was it with guy by guy basis, case by case basis, or was it a year? Because I remember, like, when Jerry Lawler came in 92, I think they kind of pumped up his resume. Was that because he wasn't from one of the big promotions? He was just from Memphis? And because they seemed to kind of respect the USWA Smoky Mountain stuff more around that time, 93, 94, because of the relationship they had. But like you mentioned, we saw guys like Carlos Colon, that was 93. So yeah, do you think there was a time where they really buried that stuff, or do you feel like they were still doing it on and off, just on a case by case?
I think basically 1990 was really the cutoff, because that was like, for instance, Saba Simba coming in, right? When, you know, then right. They had to immediately acknowledge, hey, it's Tony Atlas, because Roddy Piper's an idiot. But I mean,
screwed it up.
But even so, they did. They acknowledged it. So like, I think that was really where you first started seeing that kind of thing turn around. Because I'm just thinking back at the big names that came in the 80s before that. I mean, like Ted DiBiase got completely overhauled. Jim Duggan got completely not overhauled, but I mean, like they brought him in just like he was. You know, he had never been in wrestling before, basically.
And it's also, you know, it's also funny, Scott, that some guys were already in the WWF. I mean, Rick Martel came in, but he was a former tag team champion.
Yeah,
you know, right. So it almost seems like the decade was split in half.
That blew my mind, actually, when, like, because, you know, I didn't, because again, when I first started watching, you know, with him as half of the Can-Am Connection, you know, and they never mentioned any of that stuff, and I'd go back and watch Coliseum videos, and it's like, what? He was a tag team champion with Tony.
I know.
Martel, you know.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Santana was the tag team champion with Ivan Putski. Like, what the hell? Like, you know, they never mentioned this stuff. It's
like same thing with like Pedro Morales. Like, Pedro when I first started watching, I thought he was a glorified jobber. And I'm like, this guy was world champion here. It's like,
yeah,
what?
Exactly.
He won every belt. It's like so strange. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but they're not acknowledged at that point. You know,
well that was to them. That was a different promotion too, right? That was Vince Sr.'s thing, and you know, Vince Jr. wanted a clean break from it. So I think that was actually kind of deliberate on his part. Like different thing.
Right. You know, it's funny we bring this up because earlier today I was watching SummerSlam 89, and the match was Jimmy Snuka and Ted DiBiase. And thinking to myself, just the way Jesse's talking about Snuka, you know, Snuka was one of the most revered guys in the early half of the 80s. Great heel with Captain Lou, had an awesome feud with Backlund, then turned face, had that epic year in 83 with Morocco, with the cage. And then he comes back, and then, you know, Jesse kind of treats him like some freaking psycho, you know, like it kind of almost like, once again, this is another section of the decade. The fans that were watching in 1983 probably aren't watching anymore because they think all the cartoony stuff is crap. So it's like Snuka, oh wow, he's back, but you know, he's not really the Snuka you remember. He's kind of a big old dork who's kind of a crazed lunatic. And Jesse, there's one few times like Jesse almost disappointed me. It's like they're making him like say that Snuka's like this, you know, over the hill weirdo, and when in reality, the guy was an integral character from 80 to 84, you know? But now he's being acknowledged as some, like, not revered like Bruno, you know? He's like some crazed psycho who has no, you know, social tendencies. I don't know. It just caught me off guard today. I don't remember the commentary for Snuka, like, being so derogatory, you know? Even for Jesse, you know, who's obviously a heel announcer. But it just seemed like he was just talking him down like we'd never known what he did before 1989, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that had to do with like the murder case or anything like that. But then if that's the case, then why bring him back in the first place?
Exactly. Right? I mean, he had gone through that run. I think he had came from AWA at that point. I think he was. Had he even been feuding with Colonel DeBeers? I think 87, 80. I think so. Like 86, yeah. 87, 80. I think he was feuding with Colonel DeBeers.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Yeah, the pile driver on the concrete and all that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Colonel DeBeer is one of the more unheralded, and this is another discussion around today, but Colonel DeBeer is one of the more unheralded heels that Vern ever had, even though, like, post 86 when the company was in the stinker.
Yeah.
He was actually one of the more unheralded bad guys. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out, that I felt like Snuka was getting devalued as well.
Yeah. So. Anyway, well, so we'll say 1990 is the cutoff, I guess, for the. Mm. The thing to finally answer this question after a lot of discussion. So. All right.
What's next?
Okay. This one is about best pay-per-view names. Oh, that's a good one. All right. So somebody's watching the Best of Great American Bash Blu-ray, and this is written in July, by the way. Just so, so timeliness here is always good. So the Bash Tour Year stuff is really enhanced by the commentary of Dusty and Larry Zbysko. Overall, one of his favorite releases, and he'd highly recommend it. So a couple of questions come to mind from it. Number one. Was there a particular reason why there was no Bash pay-per-view in 93 or 94?
Hmm.
Did they just prefer Bash at the Beach at that point and feel they're too close together? It's kind of right before pay-per-views became every month. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know what was up with dropping the Great American Bash name.
Well, 93, yeah, it's weird because 93
was Beach Blast.
Beach Blast, which they used in 92
right.
in June, and Great American Bash was in July. And then 93, June, I don't think had a pay-per-view.
No, they didn't. Yeah, they dropped
They had a Clash. And yeah. then Beach Blast was moved to July, and then the next year
they combined the two names.
Bash, yeah, and they just changed to Bash at the Beach.
Yeah, I don't know. Might have been a political thing between Bischoff and Dusty. I'm not sure if like
maybe they wanted to dump the name, or maybe they didn't think it had the cachet anymore. And because it's not like they were at the beach the first year they did Bash at the Beach. I mean, they did that in 94. They didn't go to the beach till 95. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. I mean, maybe they just sort of sounded too NWA-ish with the old tours and everything.
Yeah. Okay, well, second question. Do I have a favorite pay-per-view name of all time? He thinks Great American Bash, Halloween Havoc, and Spring Stampede would be at the top. And you have to give it up to Dusty and WCW. They did have cool names for their shows. Any favorites for me? Yeah, Halloween Havoc. I think that is such a great name that's just completely going to waste right now. They should absolutely, especially
yeah, with
for
the
October,
network.
Like, you know, yeah. like with the network. Yeah, like,
yep, absolutely.
You know, instead of Hell in a Cell, like, yeah, go with Halloween Havoc. Do a themed show, you
or
know?
Keep
like,
your Hell in a Cell and just do a network special Halloween Havoc. Like, it's not that hard, right? Just, oh, it's almost like an old Saturday Night's Main Event, a two-hour special on Halloween night called Halloween Havoc, and it's going to be archived so people are trick-or-treating or at a party. They can watch it later, and it's just a themed show. That's it. I mean, it's not that hard.
I mean, it was a great name that conveyed, you know, what the show was about and conveyed the theme to people and... yeah, and everything. I think also Clash of the Champions, while not a pay-per-view name, it would be a great replacement for Night of the Champions, just because,
right.
you know, it's, I just, alliterative names, it just works so better in wrestling. It's just like, in comic books, you know, like Peter Parker and everything, right? Like it's, Dusty always had a really good flair for coming up with pay-per-view names, I thought.
Mm.
Yeah, like Halloween Havoc was definitely one of the best. I mean, Great American Bash was good too, in that it was, you know, double meaning, right?
Mm-hmm. Starcade,
yeah, right. Unlike WWE, who comes up as pays guys millions of dollars a year to come up with Fastlane, you know, like, okay.
Breaking Point.
Well, it's too bad. One of their best ones, obviously, was Over the Edge. Can't use that anymore. I always liked that one as a name.
Mm.
I thought No Way Out was always solid, especially when it was a chamber.
I miss Backlash.
Yeah, Backlash was okay.
Well, because it coincided with WrestleMania the following month.
Right.
I miss all of them. There was no need to get rid of them. No need to get rid of Unforgiven. No Mercy. Vengeance. Vengeance might be one of my favorites. I think I like Vengeance. I just like the way it sounded. Vengeance.
Yeah, Vengeance was solid. I mean, I think WCW easily laps WWF when it comes to... I think it just comes down to always being the same argument, right? WCW always seems a little bit more out of the box, a little bit more willing to kind of take a risk. And when they kind of stopped doing that is when they ran into trouble. But... they always seem to do more things. Oh, we have a show on Halloween. Halloween Havoc. Let's make it Halloween themed. Oh, we got a show around, you know, the summer. Let's make it all summer themed. So they seemed more willing to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
well, and roll the dice a little bit more.
And Bischoff was going to have New Year's Evil at the end as well, right?
So, right. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I liked Super Brawl. That always sounded cool.
That's a good name too. Yeah, that's another. Good
Well, I think we're missing the. I mean, to me, one of the winners is St. Valentine's Day Massacre on Valentine's Day. I mean, that's one of the best ones they've ever done
for one time. I mean, thing.
And I mean Royal Rumble too, obviously. Just right. you know, another winner. That's
how about this Tuesday in Texas?
Well, it's certainly
just got beaten to the ground.
That's the most descriptive title ever. Like, okay, it's literally a show this Tuesday in Texas. Okay. Yeah.
Let's make it more specific. What was the best when they named the In Your Houses from, say, you know, Good Friends, Better Enemies to, when was the last one that didn't become a monthly? No Way Out in Texas, I guess, was the last one. Or would Unforgiven 98 be considered that, I guess?
I think Unforgiven was the first one.
Yeah. Cold Day in Hell.
What was the question? Like that. Say that again, Scott.
That was a good one, too.
What do we think was the best of when they did those one-shot In Your Houses, starting with Good Friends, Better Enemies?
Okay. Yeah, I think the last official In Your House was Ground Zero.
Okay.
I think Bad Blood is where they... Oh, no. Actually, no. I'm sorry. Rock Bottom, wasn't it? Yeah. Was it Rock Bottom?
Oh, yeah. Rock Bottom. Yeah. Yep. It was the last one that they didn't repeat. So I always like Cold Day in Hell. I always thought that was good. Revenge of the Taker is easily the worst.
Yeah.
That one just didn't flow off the tongue. I liked Cold Day in Hell. Cold Day in Hell was a good one.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones out there.
Oh, I thought It's Time was pretty bad just because it had nothing to do with the guy.
Well, because by that point they got rid of it.
Yeah, it's like,
you could allegedly blame J.J. Dillon for that. So.
Well, it's always interesting how December... it's always interesting how December would kind of be like the character title ones. You had It's Time. Then you had Rock Bottom. You had DX. You know, they kind of did that for a few years there where the December one would be named after the hot act.
What about ECW? November to Remember? I always kind of like that one.
That was a good one.
Anarchy Rules.
Yeah. The pay-per-view names I wasn't so hot on, but November to Remember. I got to go back and watch the 95 on the network now that it's on there, actually.
That's one of my favorites, actually. Because that's what's awesome, right? Isn't that Steve Whipwreck and Sandman? That's a good match. I like that match.
That's the one, yep.
Yeah, I like that match. Then they rematched at Holiday Hell, I think.
Yep. The VCR off the head in the main event, that was good stuff. So.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That was a good question. I actually like that one. Favorite pay-per-view title.
Let's do one more, then we'll jump over to Facebook page.
Okay.
Well, geez. What else I got here? Has there ever been a match or matches that I have purposefully never watched and refused to do so? Hmm. And if so, for what reason? Oh, well, I try to avoid New Jack matches when I can. There's actually, yeah, like a lot of ECW stuff like that that I just... Oh, what the hell's the one? Barbed wire, the barbed wire match in ECW that...
With Sabu and Funk?
Sabu and Terry Funk. There we go, yes.
The one where Sabu's picking barbs out of his crotch? Yeah,
that's the one, yes. I have never watched that one, and I will never watch that one.
No, it's very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
It's on... which one was it on? It's on one of the two unreleased. I think it's volume one. I think it's on unreleased. Oh, no. It's on Bloodsport. It's on the Bloodsport one that came out, God, like 6 years ago or something, or 7 years ago. It's on that one. That one's uncomfortable because you're thinking, this guy's never going to have kids. He's literally, when you crotch yourself on a barbed wire, you're really asking for trouble. Thank God those tights were baggy because he might have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so there was a few of them in ECW like that where it was so far over the line that... That'd be the only one. I mean, there's nothing else I really have any moral conundrums of watching. I mean, I sat through two XPW tapes, so I mean, like, you know, it's...
Yes.
I have no standards, obviously, but... But yeah, definitely that actually, God, I'm wondering, did I review that barbed wire match? Come to think of it, I don't know. Maybe because that Bloodsport one sounds familiar. It sounds like I might have reviewed that. But
yeah, that one came out in right after the brand started. So like probably late 06, early 07, I think that one came out. Something like that.
Just quickly checking my archives here. And
I thought I remember you doing it. I thought I remember reading it. Maybe not.
I don't know. I don't have it listed here, my ECW stuff, so who knows.
Yeah, but that one's definitely on there.
All right, but that one I know I'm never going to go back and watch again. I will.
It's very awkward. Sabu was out of his mind that day, and Funk knowed him no better. Funk's not one that's gonna dissuade you from doing something like that in the middle of a match either, so because he's kind of out of his mind.
Yeah.
What about you, JR? Any match you would never want to?
I mean, is it one that we've seen and don't want to see again, or is it one, because there's a few of those, but I can't think of one that I've heard of that I like refuse to ever watch. I mean, I just may not come across it, but if I have access to it and it comes up for whatever reason, I can't really think of one off the top of my head that someone says, don't watch this, that I wouldn't watch it. So I don't know. I could probably go without ever seeing the Iron Man from WrestleMania 12 again. I know I'll have to, Scott, because we were doing the
rewatches.
Rewatches there, but... I don't know what it is about, and that's like one of my favorite years ever, 96, and I'm a big fan of both those guys, but that match just, I don't know what it is. I just have this weird mental aversion to that match.
Because there's been better Iron Man since. The Iron Man, there have been future Iron Mans booked better that don't make the two guys look like, you know, obnoxious egomaniacs who didn't mind getting pinned, who didn't want to get pinned. That was ultimately the problem. I mean, if let's put it this way, if I had to choose between WrestleMania 12 and Judgment Day 2000, I'm going to watch Judgment Day 2000, or Kurt and Brock from 03. I'm going to watch that one, or even Triple H and Benoit from that Raw in 04. I'd rather watch that one. I understand where they were going with Shawn and Brett. What do you think, Scott? I mean, after watching all these Iron Mans from this, I mean, because we know you love Brett and Shawn's a great worker. Did the lack of pins, let me be more general with the question. With all of the Iron Mans that have been out since, has that Iron Man lost its luster for you?
Oh yeah, no, I have no desire to watch it again. It's yeah, like the lack of pinfalls, just like Brett and Shawn were in such a weird place with each other at that point where Shawn didn't want to, you know, show ass for anybody, and so they couldn't agree on anybody getting a pin, and then like Shawn's working one style of match and Brett's working another style of match, and like Shawn wants to do all this state of the art submission stuff and Brett's like got something else in his head, and they're just like working at totally opposite ends, and just it's an interesting match to watch, I guess, from like a historical standpoint, like watching these two guys who clearly don't want to be doing this match with each other going out and having this hour long match, because it's you know, like Brett had basically known ever since winning the title from Diesel that he was a lame duck champion who was you know, getting sacrificed to Shawn, and knew it was going to happen, and clearly wasn't happy about it, and felt like he should have been the guy who was carrying the promotion, because you know Shawn was going to fail at it, and it's just it was a really interesting match from that standpoint, when it's just like it's psychological warfare between these two guys with massive egos and that kind of thing. But yeah, like as a wrestling match, oh god, like it's just I just don't want to watch it anymore.
What is your favorite Iron Man?
Definitely Rock Triple H, I would say. 98. Okay. Yeah, that one. That one holds up really well. It has all kinds of neat little psychological tricks in it that...
Yes, big time.
You know, like the chair shot for the DQ that pays off with the pinfall.
Yeah.
You know, right away, kind of thing like that.
Yeah,
you know,
that gets pointed out by... You and I, JR, pointed that out too on our vault that time. Yeah, that's huge. I like that. I like the... I liked Brock and Kurt. That was very well thought out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Keith, if you rewatched that one at all. I know it's on the network, I think.
Yeah, I actually just re-reviewed that show for the network a couple of months ago. And yeah, it had the Iron Man holds up really well. I believe the version without the commercials is on a DVD.
Yep.
I watched it, and that was even better, actually. But yeah, absolutely. It was DVD's really neat state of the image. Oh, geez,
That it's clipped on the SmackDown anniversary, the 2015 year.
Yeah.
Where is
it's uncut somewhere. I can't remember where it is.
I can't either.
History of WWE to.
Yeah. Damn it, I can't think. Is it on any of these new Blu-rays? No. Damn, I can't think of it. I know it's clipped on the SmackDown anniversary set, the one that came out in 2008. I think like the last 5 minutes are on it. Or no, they do like a promo piece on it, like a vignette, and they take clips. They don't do the whole thing, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's a different kind of match too. Like Brock and Triple H was clearly like, you know, mm-hmm. sports entertainment, right? You know, Brock and Angle was the two guys going out and having like this crazy intense wrestling match. You know, you know, these guys who both want to win, and it's like it's a different type of thing completely. But they're both really good, I have to say. I don't even remember Benoit and Triple H, to be honest. Like that was.
I was going to ask you about that one too. Yeah, that was. Kind of forgotten on Raw because it was in the middle of all the Eugene stuff too. Remember, they had all that where Triple H was forcing Eugene to help him and all that weird shit. Any other ones off the top of your head? What do you think of the two shortened WCW ones that were out there? The Steamboat Rude and then Dustin Rhodes and Rude.
Steamboat Rude is a lost classic, actually.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That is a fantastic match. Yeah, Dustin. Yeah, well, Dustin was not great at that point. So I mean,
I feel like they were trying to recapture the magic of the Steamboat one. A year later, and didn't click as well. Plus, Rude was more banged up in '93 than it was.
Yeah,
in early
I don't 92. Think it was that bad. I applauded Dustin for trying. I feel like he was trying to kind of go along with everybody. He was because they pushed him to the moon in '93, and I feel like they were kind of trying to get him to kind of go along with it. But yeah, Rude was, even though he didn't officially get hurt till '94, You could tell that his body was starting to break down. But boy, what a run he had in WCW. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It started at the end of 92. Because like I was watching that Havoc match today, Sky, and we were kind of debating on different sides of it. But Keith, what do you think of his match with Chono at Havoc 92?
Oh, that match. Not my favorite, but
I didn't mind it. I didn't think it was that bad.
The NWA tournament final was tremendous, though.
I know. I wish we could find that. You know what bums me out? I know we're kind of going off topic, but just quickly.
Ramble away.
You know what I wish was on the network? Here's what. They have all the WCW pay-per-views, but they don't have any of those WCW New Japan combo shows, the ones like they had in 91, 92. There are some real gems on those shows. Muda and Chono, I think it was early 92, had like a 33-minute match. It's like unbelievable when they were feuding for the NWA belt. I mean, there are some really good matches on those three shows. I'm thinking the Steiners. Who was it, JR? The Steiners. It wasn't Gordy. It was two Japanese guys. I apologize. I can't think of who it was, but I think it was 91. They fought.
Well, they had that one. They had the one on WCW pay-per-view with Iizuka and some.
Yeah, that was very good. That was really stiff as hell. They were hitting the shit out of each other. That's a crazy match. I know 92 they fought the Miracle Violence Connection like three times on TV. One was that show. They fought at a Clash. I think that was one that ended in a draw. And then there was another one. I think that Gordy and Williams won. I can't think of the.
Well, I know they had showed with 24/7. They showed the Collision in Korea show because I remember having that on tape. That's it's a little bit tough to get through some of that one, but
yeah,
I mean, I think this stuff will see the light of day eventually. I would think, but
and the other weird one they don't have in there is that that combination WWF was the one WWF to SWS.
Oh, SWS, yeah.
Yeah, like you'd think that would they'd throw that one on there as well, but I mean
the one with was that the earthquake and Katao shooting when smacks him or whatever.
Let me find New Japan. Let me see.
Fred Katao.
It's gonna kill me. Steiners. Oh, it was Hase and Sasaki.
Hase, according to some guys.
Yes, Hase. Hase and Sasaki to win the IWGP.
Hiroshi P.S. Hase.
P.S. Hase. That's right. It was Hase and Sasaki to win the IWGP. Tag straps. That's the one from March 91.
I'm all about the Hase.
Yeah, and then
no Chono.
And then they rematched on I'm pretty sure it was a Clash. And then that was the one where Fujinami beat Flair, and that led to the Super Brawl, or was it Super Bowl? Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
That was a Super Show on anyone.
Yeah. So
all right. Well, yeah. Rude. I thought by the end of 92, he was starting to slow up a little bit. And some of those matches in 93, I feel like you were waiting for them to be really good because of how good he was in 92. And he just seemed to have lost a step. Like, even that match with Flair, was that a Fall Brawl? They go like a half hour, and you kind of wait for it to get good, and it just never kind of gets there. I mean, it's good, but not what you would expect, given the two guys, especially the hot streak Rude was on. I just feel like 93, he was starting to taper off just a bit. Because, I mean, for that first year in WCW, he was just ridiculously on fire.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here we go. So actually, I've just been cruising history of WWE while my connection was dropping here, and looks like that the Iron Man match was on Greatest Superstars of the 21st Century on DVD.
Oh, do I have that DVD? I think I do.
Which one was that? The Brock?
Yeah,
the Brock, one that has Brock on cover.
The Brock Angle,
right? Uncut. Okay. With no commercials.
Yeah.
Do I have?
I thought it was on the SmackDown one too. It wasn't?
No, there's like a vignette. They like make a vignette out of it.
Oh, okay.
SmackDown one. It's not the whole match. It's chopped. And speaking of, you know what annoyed me about the Bret Shawn Iron Man? That history of the WWE Championship? It takes up like two-thirds of disc two. There's like three matches on disc two. They had to put that one on there.
I know.
You know? So annoying.
All right,
speaking of your boy Hase, he fought Sting at the third one in 93.
Hiroshi Hase. P.S. Hase. All right, let's hop over to our Facebook page. We have a question from Austin Pfaff. As much as I'm enjoying the Monday Night War series on the network, I'm hoping this will be the last we hear about the wars for quite a while. Don't you think the wars are so played out at this point? Yes, it's a major part of history, but there's only so much new moon material you can produce about it. In your opinions, what major event or events do you also feel are played out too much? I would agree with that. I think the problem is they beat it into the ground, but now they have a forum where they should be talking about it, but we've already talked about it so much, so it's kind of tough to find that new ground. I know there's a lot of hope for that series, and a lot of it's kind of refreshed material mixed in with some new Talking Head stuff, but, you know, Keith, I've liked your ideas. I think you've espoused in the past on your blog, so I'll let you expound a bit on, instead of doing what they did with that series, if you want to fresh up the Monday Night Wars, why not do something where you can watch the Nitro and the Raw head-to-head? Wasn't that one of your ideas?
Yeah, well, that was, yeah, that, like, it, absolutely. And that's what I want to start doing, actually, if they ever catch up with the goddamn Raws on the network, which they finally added three more. So we're up to the Shawn Michaels concussion show now, actually, on there. So I'm excited to get close to there. But, yeah, I'm going to – that's my review plan. Once they finally get caught up, then I'm gonna start doing them one each night, right?
And it would be kind of cool to let you, like – do a double feature box where you can watch them both together and flip between the audio. I mean, that's really probably next level advancement for technology, but it would be kind of cool to do something like that too.
Yeah.
Or even how about, like, even if you, when you're watching Raw, you can turn on like a pop-up video kind of thing where it tells you what was happening on Nitro at that very moment and what the rating was. Something to make it different.
Oh, you can call it Eric Bischoff mode, because that's exactly what he was doing while he was
watching. Give it away to say what's happening. But yeah, I mean, because they did that pop-up video. Remember they released that special WrestleMania 3 DVD that had like the pop-up video information?
Yep, I have it.
Yeah,
it was
awesome.
Two discs. The second disc had pop-ups, and it had like quick little interview hits.
Why not do that for the shit on the network? Like, that would be cool. Like old shows with pop-up video added in.
Yeah, well, because I remember they showed that WrestleMania one on 24/7. I thought that was like, that was awesome. And then, like, you know, and 24/7 was run by wrestling nerds, and like, you know, they would do all sorts of cool things like that. And you know, like, then, like we talked about before, like the March Madness tournament with results from things like that. Yeah, like that's exactly the kind of stuff that they should do. You know, have fun on the network with it.
Right. They need the blend, like Scott, you mentioned before, with bringing the wrestling fan, bringing the wrestling nerd, blend it with someone who's a little bit more forward thinking that isn't just myopic with that view. Yeah. That's what they need.
And you know what they should do too, actually, since I watch, you know, YouTube and all the time now instead of TV, bring in like the Game Grumps or Steven Larson from 10 for the Wind to come in, and just because these guys are huge wrestling fans who have their own built-in fan bases on, like, you know, kind of a related topic, and you know, let them go in and watch, you know, like, you know, terrible wrestling or Macho Man matches or something like that, right? Like these things that they're passionate about, and they have a million plus subscribers that they can get people to you know, maybe watch on the network, something like that. Like, you know, don't just keep using the same, you know, talking heads that are under contract over and over.
Right. We've heard Stephen Lombardi talk about the DX invasion more than enough times.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, here's one from Justin Pratt. What wrestlers do you think were the best squash match wrestlers? This is a cool question. I like this.
Are we talking about winners or losers?
Yeah, that's a difference here.
Let's go with the winners, the guys who put on the most enjoyable squashes when they were beating the shit out of guys.
The Road Warriors.
Yeah.
No doubt.
No doubt. Yeah, Road Warriors, Demolition? Steiner Brothers, Demolition, yeah.
Big dudes, like big dudes that can hit. Giant Gonzalez? We saw a pretty good squash the other day, JR, on our Raw rewatch.
Yes. Well, the Steiners are always good. They always beat the crap out of jobbers. Bigelow, I used to enjoy his squash matches. I thought he had decent ones.
Sid?
Yeah, oh yeah, Sids were fun.
Sids were good. Trying to think of WCW guys.
Vader.
Yeah.
Well, he actually, one guy broke his back. Yeah.
Oh no! Actually, the champions have to be the Midnight Express, because they took it to an art form of just like, not even just like beating the crap out of them, but doing, you know, all sorts of crazy entertaining things that you wouldn't necessarily think of, like, you know, throwing, like, you know, they would take turns, like Bobby would throw him out and Dennis would throw him back in, and they would just, like, you know, they'd be playing tennis with the guy, right, like tossing the jobber in and out of the ring, and, you know, coming up with every kind of crazy double team that you could think of. So that I would vote for them as well.
Akeem. Awesome squashes.
Oh, there you go.
Twin Towers is a combo. Yes.
Argument finished. There you are.
Outback Jack. No.
All right, here's one for you, Keith. This is from Chad Campbell. Where do you rank the Clash 17 Arn and Zbyszko versus Steamboat and Rhodes tag among all WCW matches?
Ooh, all right. Well, I love that match for sure. I think as far as WCW matches go overall, obviously the Flair Steamboat Trinity, still the best. War Games 91 and War Games 92. Mm-hmm. As well, or right up there. I mean, I'm of course a huge mark for just, like, you know, straight tag team wrestling, and definitely Enforcers versus Dustin and Steamboat was great, especially the moment, you know, Arn Anderson, of course, just completely sells the entire concept of the match when, you know, he's freaking out and telling, you know, Larry, he's just a man, right? Like, you know, that's like, God, that's awesome stuff from AA. But I mean, yeah, like that one, and of course the run of Midnights and Rock and Roll Express tag team matches, Hollywood Blondes against Steamboat and Douglas as well, or right up there. They had a 5-star one, I think, on Worldwide Wrestling. Wasn't the title change, but there was another one that was five stars. That was
who's your favorite out of all those kind of we'll call them incestuous teams you had where they all kind of traded partners around. So you had Rhodes and Wyndham for a while, Steamboat and Rhodes, Steamboat and Douglas. Which of those pairings did you enjoy the most?
Rhodes and Wyndham had some crazy good chemistry. Mm-hmm. I mean, for obvious reasons. I'm surprised we never got Wyndham and Steamboat. Actually, that would have been a really interesting combination, I feel, although both of them would want to have been like, you know, face in peril, I think,
for, right.
Yes. For the entire match there like that, right? But yeah, I think Steamboat and Douglas would have been better if Douglas was a better hot tag guy. I mean, I just didn't buy Douglas as like the dangerous guy on the apron that Steamboat right. would desperately want to make the tag to, which is the thing. So I mean, Steamboat really needed in somebody, and Dustin Rhodes at least had, you know, he had good credibility, so like you could buy that after Steamboat was getting the shit beat out of him for 18 minutes by the enforcers that, you know, he's going to tag out to Dustin, and Dustin's kind of like a real threat to go after them and clean house on them. So probably out of those ones, I think yeah, Steamboat and Dustin were unfortunately they were kind of a short-lived team as well, because they ended up dropping the titles pretty quickly, but they had a lot of potential, I think.
Yeah, I mentioned the Hollywood Blondes. I did enjoy Jake the Snake using their theme music at Halloween Havoc 92 when it came out. I was like, wait, I know the song.
Yeah, well, that theme music got recycled so many times. Greg Valentine had it, too, for a while.
I think every jobber in 1996 and 1997 had it, pretty much.
Yeah, was there a message there they were trying to send to Austin?
Give any jobber your music. All right, why don't you do one from your mailbag, Keith, and then we'll do one more here, and then we'll take a break.
Okay, random question one here from Timothy Byrne. Something that was given a great deal of column in the days of the Apter Mags was the relative prestige of the different championships in various federations. NWA and WWF are considered world champions, of course, along with the AWA. So his questions are, number one, are there any titles like UWF, ECW, and World Class that I thought, using that logic, should have been described at any time as a world title? I don't know about UWF. They were pretty regional, even though they were trying to describe themselves as a world title. I think really PWI had it pretty much the right way with NWA and WWF as world champion. Maybe like the IWGP title, because it was a pretty major prestigious one.
Where do you stand on ECW?
I think that anything that's ever held by Justin Credible cannot be rightly considered.
Now, listen, I can say anything held by, you know, Jack Swagger, it is, you know, the level of heat he had at one point couldn't be considered a world title either. So
yeah, and that one's not around anymore. So there you go.
True.
What's the show?
Yeah,
I think out of those ones, World Class, I think, would be the only one that I would have considered to be. And up until like, you know, 88, 89 when it went off a cliff. But I mean, like,
right.
For a while there, it had a pretty good amount of prestige.
And they didn't even call themselves the world class champion, right? Wasn't it like in the very early 80s, it was the Texas Heavyweight Championship? I don't even think it was called like the world class.
Yeah, no, it didn't. That was until they split off from the NWA. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about Ring of Honor? What do you think of theirs?
Yeah, actually, I think they have as good a claim as anybody now, I think.
I think so too. I mean, they go all around the place.
Right? Like they defended all over the world. I mean, they have much more of a claim, I'd say, on the world title status than NWA does these days.
Yeah, and they bring a lot of foreign talent in too to face off with their champions. So
yeah, I mean, like who the hell is even NWA world champion now? Is it Rob Conway still, or is that
Kenshin? He lost it, and then I think he won it back. He lost it to a Japanese wrestler.
Yeah,
and then I think he won it back. So
right, so there you go, Rob Conway.
I should know. Kevin Kelly had him on a show. I think he had just. I don't know, and I can't remember.
Which is nothing against Rob Conway as a wrestler, as a person, but I mean, come on! Like,
it's quite the legacy from Flair, Race, Steamboat, Conway.
Conway, the chic dude who like bought the title for $10,000 or whatever. It's like, come on!
Yes. All right, that was a quick one. You want to hit up another one?
So there's other parts of the question here.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so was there any time in history when WWF, NWA, or AWA titles should not have been considered a world title? For example, is Kurt Hennig a former world champ during his AWA run? And, well, yes, because Kurt Hennig was, I think, because Hennig was the guy who was maintaining it as a world title, I think, at that point. After that, I think it should, like, after Jerry Lawler was stripped of the title, I think it should have been dropped as world title status. I mean, and during the Larry Zbysko, Mr. Saito days was... By that point, it was just a regional title, again, essentially. The NWA title always should have been world title. I mean, they were obviously the front runner. And I know for a while, WWF one was actually dropped as a world title in PWI.
Right.
When Bob Backlund was a champion defending against Samoans every week. And speaking of which, if you ever want hilarity, by the way, and you get your hands on old issues of The Observer from like 1983 to 1985, and you owe it to yourself to read Dave Meltzer like ragging on Bob Backlund week after week after week, and that it's actually really hilarious because you wouldn't think that Bob Backlund would inspire that level of hatred in somebody at that point, because you know he was at least a decent wrestler, but my right. God, like, you know, just
despise him.
Just despised him, and it was just it's so funny, like, you know, because Dave is such a mellow, you know, diplomatic guy now, and he's talking about things, but back then he was full of piss and vinegar, and he just hated Bob Backlund, and I don't even know where it came from, and like he'd carried over to 1994 as well. Like if you read the back issues now where Bob Backlund came back, like Dave considered him like a complete joke, and it was you know a blight on the world title that Bob ever won it. So.
Just to go back to what we were saying a moment ago, Conway had first won it last March at the NWA branded Outlaw Wrestling Show. Then Satoshi Kojima won it back at this past January at the Wrestle Kingdom 8.
Oh yeah.
And then Conway won it back in June at the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion show.
Wow.
So there you go. So this actually, is Conway's second run.
I remember Kojima winning it. That's right, actually.
Yeah. So
yeah.
There you go.
Okay. And then finally, was there ever a point in time when the AWA title was more prestigious than either NWA or WWF titles? And just off the top of my head, I'm going to have to say no.
Probably not.
Especially
maybe we're going back. I mean, I guess it depends on what timeline you want to talk about. I mean,
maybe for the brief period, actually, when Hogan was challenging Nick Bockwinkel for the title in like 83-ish and they were filling up the stadium.
I was gonna say that, but that was kind of during the peak of the Harley Flair.
But that was, yeah, exactly.
You know, the Harley Flair bounty stuff with Orton and Dick Slater. I was thinking more like, I don't know, mid-70s when Vern and Bockwinkel were feuding, and you know, like Funk was the champ, and the mid-70s had like the tail end of Bruno and. I would think maybe like 75, 76, maybe.
Maybe for the week when Stan Stasiak was the champion.
God, that was what, 71, I think? Yeah, 71. Wow.
So, yeah.
With maybe, one of maybe. Vern's 800 reigns.
That's right. There you go. So maybe there was a week there when Vern was like number two. You
know? Yes. So.
All right. So there we go. That's all I got for that email.
Then. Okay.
All right. So Michael McDonald asks, 90s music. What do you like or loathe? And, of course, this is a shameless tournament plug for our greatest song of the 90s tournament going on at PlaySimulation.com. Keith, any 90s bands your favorite? Nickelback's are 2000, so we can't count them.
Oh, God. You know, Nickelback's playing here again, actually. In a couple months.
I assume that's all they play now is just yes. Bars in Canada, I would assume.
Yeah, they still play stadiums in Canada.
Do they?
Nickelback is still a big deal in Canada. I don't know why anymore, honestly. Sorry, I lost the thread here. Okay, so best 90s bands. Nickelback. Yeah, no, definitely not Nickelback, I would say. I was really into Semisonic for a long time in the 90s.
I like Semisonic.
Actually, yeah, they had, although they, I think they're, like the album I was really into came out after, actually. It was All About Chemistry, which I think was in the 2000s, actually. So I don't know if I can count them as such. I don't know. I wasn't really like a 90s, like during the 90s, I was like in university. Oh, actually, I guess Pearl Jam. We'll have to, I was a grunge kid. So I guess Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, all those kind of ones. That's mostly what I was listening to for the 90s, and then I would just go back and listen to AC/DC again.
And all those bands you mentioned are represented well in this tournament, Keith. So,
okay, we'll go Pearl Jam then. That'll be my pick then.
I like it. So Scott and I earlier did our votes for one of the rounds, so we're going to do it again here with you. So for Group F, Mr. Keith, I need you to pick your five. We're going to cast the votes right here live on air. So you need to pick five out of the 10 here.
Okay.
We have Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Insane in the Brain by Cypress Hill, Let's Talk About Sex by Salt and Pepper, Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Elton John, Fantasy by Mariah Carey, Aeroplane by Red Hot Chili Peppers, First of the Month by the Bone Thugs in Harmony, Emotions by Mariah Carey, A Girl Like You by Edwin Collins, and A Show Me Love by Robin. So we need to pick five of those to advance here.
Wow. Okay. A lot of those are way out of my wheelhouse. I legitimately could not name a Bone Hug Thugs and Harmony song or tell you how it goes. So we can eliminate them right away. I'll go with the two Chili Pepper songs, Cypress Hill. Geez, what else is there that I would... I've already lost.
Elton, you got Salt and Pepper, Mariah Carey, Edwin Collins, Robin.
Oh yeah, Edwin Collins. I like that song actually. Going there, and I guess we'll go with Elton John because you know it's Elton. He's a classic. So yeah.
Well, Sir Elton is in fourth right now in that one. So of the ones you picked, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Aeroplanes on the outside looking in right now, and Edwin Collins not faring too well. He's towards the bottom. So.
Oh, wow.
Tons of fun, though, each and every day. We're going to have 640 songs in round one. So every day you get to pick 5 out of 10. So I want to give a big thanks to our buddy Brian Bayless over your blog. He's on there every day pushing this thing. We appreciate everyone who comes over and votes and chats about it, too, in the daily threads. Been a lot of cool banter.
Brian is the hardest working guy on the blog, let me tell you.
He is. He laps you easily.
Yeah, daily updates. And, yeah, like, I know. Tell me about it. I've long, you know. I've long maintained that I'm probably the laziest person on the blog. Like, I mean, put forward no illusions about being like, you know, hardworking or anything like that when it comes to it. I am the WWE Network of the blog. It's my job to, you know, make as much money off of it as I can with the least amount of effort. So.
I would say dealing with some of the comments in there is probably the hardest work you may do is just reading the comments. That would be my guess. But all right, so why don't we go to take a break? We'll come back and we'll do some more mail.
Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week, that's right, the Steve Corino Show, every week, here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Parv. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for the great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, we are back, Nation, in the midst of going through our mailbags here with Scott Keith. He's hitting up his. We're hitting up our Facebook page. And we're going to go back to his mailbag now for a couple here. So, Mr. Keith, if you want to reach deep in there, pull one out.
All right, reach deep. One day ago. Okay. Lucha Underground, which I don't know if you guys have been talking about much. In case you need a reminder or indication of interest, I'd love to hear your opinion on the next episode of Lucha Underground. Personally, I'm going to give the first 10 episodes a watch to see how the whole thing develops, as apparently there's some early growing pains that they're working out, and seeing a Fed try to navigate these things with some money behind it and some fresh ideas is genuinely exciting. Side question, does this hurt Morrison's stock within WWE? Would this be seen as on par with signing to TNA, or does it really not matter, since he still has some name value, and if WWE wants him back and Morrison wants to come back, it'll happen? Yeah, I really liked the first couple episodes of Lucha Underground. I mean, I don't watch Lucha Libre as a rule, but I mean, it was Americanized enough that I could get into it as an idiot American fan without being too lost, which was nice. The storylines were certainly, you know, much more solidly crafted, I think, than WWE's been doing on their TV. As for Morrison, yeah, like, I'm just shocked he's not back as it is, actually. Since they're so short of baby faces and top stars and on WWE, you'd think that they would be trying to snap him up at the earliest opportunity.
Yeah, I would think so, too. He's one guy that's always surprised me that he hasn't returned yet. Same with MVP. I thought he'd be back eventually, too, before he signed with TNA. Those two guys I'd expect at some point to return. I haven't watched Lucha Underground yet. How does it profile? Did you watch Lucha Libre USA at all, Scott, when that was on?
I did. I watched it.
Well, I know you did. I'm sorry. I meant Keith.
Oh.
No, I mean, I wouldn't have access to any of this stuff. Like Lucha Underground, I have to download because it doesn't air anywhere in Canada, and neither did Lucha Libre USA, as far as I know.
Yeah, that was, I mean, obviously we had a special bond to it with our buddy John Walters. RJ Brew was one of the head honchos on that show, but I was just curious if the presentation was similar to how that one ran, which I thought they Americanized that show well, too. So I'd be curious how it does. I mean, Yeah, I think there's plenty of room for something to, even though the bubble is thin and the wrestling is not hot, I think there is plenty of room for another promotion or two to step up, and we'll see if Jarrett finally gets this thing. Apparently, there's an announcement tomorrow. They made an announcement today that there's an announcement coming tomorrow. So far, it's been all announcements and not much else out of Global Force, but we'll see if he can actually get something going. Or what do you think, Keith? Do you think it's actually going to be a promotion, or do you think it's almost going to be just like a promotion company where they promote other, because I know they're promoting the New Japan show on American soil. They're doing the commentary and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, if all he ever wants to do is bring New Japan shows to American pay-per-view, then he's already a step ahead of most of the other promoters, I know, that's for sure.
That's what I'm wondering. He's just going to promote other shows in the U.S., around the U.S., almost like an NWA governing body in a way, where they're all kind of under the Global Force banner. And they run different shows under that title, and you know, so maybe he never actually starts a promotion. It's just he kind of promotes other shows.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get the sense that there is a any kind of real wrestling promotion that he's doing. Like it just like it feels like that. Yeah, he's just he's just kind of promoting other stuff. And you know, the thing is that you can't just start a wrestling promotion now. I mean, it's not like the 80s anymore where you find a money mark and then, like, you know, go out and run some indie shows and make a couple thousand dollars. I mean, you have to have a TV deal in place before you can do any of this stuff. And as we're learning with TNA, there's just no TV deals out there, especially even for a company that gets, like, you know, guaranteed million viewers a week kind of thing. So, I mean, it seems to be if he wants to do something like that, then he is doing the smartest thing, which is, you know, just getting his name out there and lending it out to other companies and, you know, bringing them in and attaching.
Take their money. Yep.
Take their money. Exactly.
Yeah. Spending yours.
That's right.
I mean, he had a money mark for years and then they had the falling out with Dixie. But what's your prediction, Keith? Where's TNA on January, whatever the first Thursday is?
January 8th. Well, things are not looking good for them right now. You think they would have announced something by now if they're going to? I think that much like WCW, they're going to just keep trying to finalize those deals and then they're going to give up. And I think, I don't think it's going to happen. I think end of November is going to come and they're going to have their last, whatever best of show that they're going to run. And then, yeah, that'll be it. And they'll quietly close the doors just like ECW did before them.
Really? You think so? I feel like they have one. I feel like they have a deal. I do. And I feel like it's not a great one. So they're doing all they can to find a better one. They're shopping it around. And I feel like they know they have one in their back pocket they can fall back on. I think they're gonna exist in 2015. That's my prediction. I don't think it's gonna be a great deal. They could have ended up on that weird, what was it, like Velocity Network or whatever. Coincidentally enough, Velocity, but no Heat Network available. But yeah, they'll be on the Velocity Network and they won't have huge viewership and it may not be as much money and maybe they have to streamline what they do, but I do think they'll exist in 2015. What do you think, Scott?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of these guys are not going to want to work in a smaller company if they feel they have more value elsewhere. So I don't know what kind of roster they can put out.
Well, maybe they'll finally have the roster they should have. Young guys that are hungry.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they want to
go to the top, like they should have, and not overpaying millions for a name guy like, you know, that. Whatever, because he was a name at one time in WWF or WWE. Don't spend, you know, millions on that.
Oh no, I'm talking about even guys like they're modern, they're homegrown guys. I mean, I don't know if Bobby Roode wants to or Samoa Joe. Well, he's not homegrown, but he's more the face of TNA than some of those other guys. I don't know if they want to get paid or work in a smaller environment. Maybe they want to get some feelers out there. Who knows? I mean.
Well, I mean, I think as long as their TNA is not restricting their indie dates is the thing.
That's like, the only thing. I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be a big deal if TNA says, okay, well, we're gonna, you know, we're cutting down. We'll need you for TV once a week, and you take as many indie dates as you want. You know, around that, as long as you're there for the TV shows,
right?
Then I think it'd be, you know, they'd probably be able to survive kind of like that. Mm. But I mean, if they're doing the thing where it's like, well, we need you to sign an exclusive contract to work one day a week at TV. And hope for the best, then yeah, I just can't see very many people sticking around for that.
Well, time will tell to see if the roster. I mean, I'm sure Samoa Joe will want to you know, test the waters out in the indies and you know, guys like.
Well, I mean, Joe's going to be okay in the indies. I mean, I don't think anybody's worried about his prospects out there. I mean,
do you think?
And I mean,
do you think, Go ahead, finish it. Sorry, I'm sorry, Keith.
I mean, it's like, you know, and you know, look at Bad Influence, and you know, they're doing fine for themselves out there as well, taking all these dates. You know, it's more like, you know, your Rockstar Spuds and, you know, your EC3s and those kind of guys who, you know, especially with Ethan Carter, who is somebody who never really did the indie scene. Like, he was a product of the WWE thing, and then suddenly having to get thrown out to the wolves like that to try to learn things on the indies, that would be a weird transition. And I think he would be more likely one of the more frequent stories that we have now, where somebody falls out of the WWE system and then just quits wrestling because they don't know how to make it on their own on the indies.
Mm. Do you think that some of these guys in this roster are going to have a stigma, like James Storm? See, I'm a big James Storm fan, but he's easily, again, like a Bobby Roode or a Samoa Joe, like the face of TNA over the last, you know, 9 years or whatever. Is he a guy that they're going to look at and go, well, he worked at that loser promotion for a long time? Do you think guys like them will get kind of stuck with that stigma of being in with TNA and not get work elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's already happening now just because, you know, we're to the point now where WWE could basically take anybody that they wanted, and they just don't. They have no... There's no interest in a James Storm or a Bobby Roode, or if there is, then it's like, you know, these guys are already in their late 30s now. Mm. You know, what interest is there going to be from WWE in that? It's like, because you have to send them down through the system, first of all, because WWE has invested millions of dollars in that, and you're not going to just bypass it for a couple of guys from TNA. You know, like, you have to,
right.
As weird as it sounds, I mean, the system is, it's more important to put that over than
right.
a lot of these
and
guys.
And if they're sending guys like Prince Devitt and Kevin Steen and Tommy Kenta through developmental, you know, I mean, you're not going to send some of these other TNA guys there as well?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just a matter of principle. I mean, like, the, you know, for the health of the developmental system, you have to, and, you know, it's just a fact of the business. And then, you know, but when you do that, then that's 2 years that you're not going to get out of them in the big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and by then they're pushing 40, and, you know, why bother? So, yeah, I think I think there is a lot of stigma attached to them just by, you know, having been in TNA that long and basically, you know, used up that portion of their career. Or, you know, same with Sting. You know, that was 10 years that he could have been in WWE, you know, becoming the legend and going into the Hall of Fame, and he chose to work for TNA instead. And that's, unfortunately, that's kind of what's limited his career now, I think.
Hmm. All right, what's next?
Okay, favorite quirks. What are some of your favorite wrestler quirks? For example, I always enjoy how Macho Man always slapped the mat when he jumped over the top rope to the floor, or the way Bret Hart entered the ring. Oh, yeah, that's actually a good one. There's a lot of them like that. I was like, actually, Macho Man's knee drop, that was a really good quirk.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he had to his. Ted DiBiase's fist drop. Kurt Hennig's, you know, shaky leg. The way he would shake his leg before kicking a guy in the head, I thought was great. Those are probably the ones that I always remember from my childhood, I think.
The way Warlord used to hook those fingers doing the full Nelson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's kind of weird because there's a lot, they don't get a lot of quirky wrestler anymore because they that's another thing with, you know, coming up through the developmental system like that, where it's beaten out of them basically, right? Because they all learn the same TV friendly style,
yeah.
Way of doing things, three clotheslines, making your comeback, you know, like, and yeah, and it does seem like there's very little room for personal growth like that. Like CM Punk was one of the last guys who came in with this, you know, he had that kind of a different quirky style to him like that, and didn't get developed in NXT like that. Dolph Ziggler, to a certain degree, is came up through the system, and he's got his own little quirks, I think. But yeah, like it seems like everybody else who comes up, yeah, it's the same kind of homogenized product that they do in, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of room for creative expression anymore, unfortunately.
Who had DiBiase used to have that cool thing where if ever he got like clotheslined on the top rope, if a guy like was snapping him, he'd do that really where he'd just go straight up in the air like in one, like a plank, and just land like a big like dump, like dive. DiBiase had like a myriad of quirks. His work was a lot of quirks. But I agree with you, Scott, that it's a lot of them just get beaten out of you. You are very.
What about Rock when he used to do the punches and spit his hand on the last one and then smack the guy? That was a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, Rock understood the business better than a lot of the guys. So yeah, he always had all those things that he that he'd come, and like the unique way he would do the Hurricane DDT, and those kind of things. And he also did the same. I think he did. He actually did the shaking his leg before kicking a guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like delivering the boots things too. Which I'm wondering if it was maybe kind of a thing that he lifted from Kurt Hennig a little bit. But
he looked like it. It's very similar. What about Boss Man's over the top rope cell where he'd always get his neck snapped under the bottom rope?
Oh yeah,
he did that a few times.
Yeah.
It was a different business back then, I think.
Yeah. Who else had a couple? Perfect's neck snap. If you're sitting down and he'd snap your neck over. Who had another? There was another one I just had in my head and I can't remember it now. Austin, you know, obviously he would do the mud hole stomp in the corner, and the last one he'd do the double ups. That was very consistent.
Yep.
Did Brett have any?
Well, I mean, he had the turnbuckle cell.
Right, like, yeah.
You know, it's charging the turnbuckle.
Oh, the turnbuckles into the sternums.
Yeah.
Which were used by a bunch of other people. That was a stolen quirk. Benoit used to do it. A few guys actually stole that quirk, the running into the turnbuckle. Because it had such good visual effect, you know? And I'm sure it hurt like hell because they were going full blast. But it had good visual effect when you saw it on the screen.
The way Frenchie Martin waved that flag.
Right in your face. The way Mr. Fuji did nothing.
Ugh, never done anything.
He's classic Fuji.
Classic Fuji. All right, let's see. Let's see. We haven't talked enough about the network. All right, I like this one from Aaron George. Defining moment of a guy's career. Not necessarily the title win, but what is the defining moment you think of? So he gives us a few guys, but we can throw out some other ones. So Rick Martel, Randy Savage, Ted DiBiase, Sid, Powers of Pain. So we can go through a few here. So what about Rick Martel, Keith? What was his defining moment in your mind?
His defining moment? Probably blinding Jake Roberts with arrogance before WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'd say that or...
I think the heel turn at
Yeah,
five.
Turning on Tito.
He's a loser.
That was pretty good.
I never liked that guy anyway.
I like those two there. How about Savage?
Oh, boy, too many to name. Actually, he's had a lot of defining moments in his career. I think WrestleMania 7 will have to... Just as the capper to his entire career,
mm-hmm.
I think if he had retired for real after that, then he would have... You know, he could have retired as with an awesome career just on that moment alone. Either that or the ring bell with Ricky Steamboat, which kind of summed up his whole career again in one match. The crazy maniac who'll do anything to win, you know, then win a mid-card intercontinental title match on general principles.
Yeah, WrestleMania 4, obviously.
Yeah. He's had a lot of them. I mean, you know, really, it's Macho Man, right?
Be a Man, making that CD. That was
Be a Man, Hulk, yeah. which I was pointing out, which was, by the way, I don't know if it's eclipsed it or not, but that was up until today the stupidest press release I've ever received from wrestling promotion.
I don't know. 2002 was like such a bizarre time in wrestling. It was because it's like all these guys didn't know what the fuck to do with only one company around. It was like pre TNA kind of. Ring of Honor was early in. You know what they were going to be. You know, ECW's gone. WCW's gone. And it's kind of like, what do all these guys do? So okay. Well, let's have Randy Savage. I'm going to have Brian Adams be my bodyguard, and I'm going to make a CD calling out Hulk Hogan. It was just so, like, also random. It was just an odd time in wrestling history.
Well, and, you know, they sent me that CD, too, right? I was dumb enough to respond to the press release. And they're like, oh, hey, we'll send you a copy to review. And, yeah, so.
I had myself a feature role in Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was...
Boonsaw.
That was before I had a wife, so that was...
yeah, a lot of time for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How about DiBiase?
Defining moment. Probably the Million Dollar Man initial skits that he was doing. I don't know if that's a defining moment as such, but I mean, maybe the first time he shoved money into a jobber's mouth.
Mm.
Kind of really summed up the whole Million Dollar Man gimmick in one shot and got him over. First time we saw the belt, yeah. That was a good one, too.
I'd say, too, when he bought the title from Andre. I mean, that's about sums up what he was all about, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Okay, I'll go with that one. I like that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much why he was there. And it's funny because, you know, Scott and I are watching those in order now to do the refresh our written reviews. And it's funny to see year after year how he just keeps trying to use his money. Like, it was this great character development, like all through the title feud, trying to buy his money, pays off, buys Andre, team up with him. And then even to 89, does the buying of the 30th spot in the Rumble. You know, it was like so much of it was always constantly using his money.
That Rumble vignette was one of the great underrated things in wrestling history, actually, where he's
him and Slick.
Him and Slick, yeah, trying to buy the spot in the Rumble. Yeah, like that was kind of, it's like, it was, you didn't have Michael Cole explaining it to you and JBL laughing about it hysterically on commentary afterwards. It was a nice little subtle character moment that people could figure out for themselves, you know, and just kind of thing you don't get anymore.
How about Sid?
Well, defining moment for Sid. Probably the Shawn Michaels match at Survivor Series 96, I think. I mean, I know it doesn't necessarily have to be those, but I mean, like, that was the one where he suddenly became a world title guy, I think, finally, after those years.
Shaving cream in his face?
Shaving cream in his face.
when he ripped up the barbershops?
Yeah, that was good, too. I don't know, but pre-WWF, like, there was the Skyscrapers match at Great American Bash 89 where they squashed the shit out of the Dynamic Dudes. The crowd was basically, you know, cheering for Sid, Monster Heel. I think that was that was another one too, where it was like that was the first time that WCW really really figured out what they had with the guy too.
I can't believe they put Powers of Pain though. The greatest Powers of Pain moment.
Beating the Bolsheviks at SummerSlam 88.
Beating the Bolsheviks. No. I was actually just watching a Nitro from January 1st, 96. It was the Powers of Pain under masks as the Super Assassins against Lex Luger and Sting. And they got destroyed. Yeah, but you could see it was so clearly. It's like Warlord still had the same boots on, right?
And he had the W on his tights, even though it was the Super Assassins.
Yeah, and then Barbarian was still trying that elbow off the second rope and missing it, and just like, it's like, really? Come on, who are we kidding here, guys? So I think that might be up there as well as a defining moment, just because they were like...
I was just watching Havoc 92. Barbarian's kind of confounding, because I feel like he got really good in WWF in late 90 into 91, and then obviously he'd have a good run in WCW later on. But he gets this big world title program with Cactus Jack as his manager, feuding Ron Simmons, and he looks like so uninspired throughout the whole thing. It's just weird for a guy that usually was a pretty good worker and was usually pretty into things. It was just odd. Like, that whole match, he seems just kind of out of it during that run.
I thought the same thing when I was watching those, JR. You're right about that. Yeah.
Maybe he was as bored as everybody else was at that point. I don't know.
So that's like they really hit the skids at Halloween Havoc 92. Like, I feel like I've really been enjoying these 92s, watching all the clashes and the pay-per-views. But like I was telling the guys on the site today, I was watching on the treadmill at the gym, and it was like, you know, if there's any way to make time go even slower while you're working out, it's watch the end of Halloween Havoc 92 with Simmons and with Rude and Chono and Simmons and Barbarian. It makes you feel like you're walking for 17 hours watching those two fucking matches.
Yeah, that was actually the first WCW pay-per-view that was available in Western Canada, actually, because we didn't get pay-per-view until 92, and it was just like, and what a way to start off the pay-per-view era for me, right? Because I had to talk my dad into ordering that one, and I wanted to love that show so much. And yeah, God, that Rude Chono match. Oh, thanks for bringing that up again, because that was just like, what a memory. It's just my dad was just so disgusted with like watching it. And I was like, we paid $30 for this, you know, like.
And the show started well too.
Yeah, it was like Steamboat and Pillman had a really good match at the beginning, and it was like Freebirds. What was it? It was like Freebirds getting cheered against like Johnny Gunn and
It was it was Arn. No, it wasn't the Freebirds. It was Arn Hayes. It was when Hayes was managing Arn.
Right.
And they squashed Zenk, Johnny Gunn, and Shane Douglas.
Johnny Gunn, the future.
Actually, no, they lost. Eaton's team lost, even though they were getting cheered the whole time.
Yeah. Why don't they bring back? Because Johnny Gunn owns the Patriot gimmick now. You think they bring him in for a one shot to get killed by Rusev at some point?
Right. Yeah, they should do that.
Actually, yeah,
they should have Rusev pull the old Yokozuna body slam challenge. See if someone could beat him on the, or see if someone can break the accolade on the ship, go on the ship, and everyone gets put in the hold. If they could break it,
oh, he's gonna have like the Siberian challenge, right? They'll go to Siberia and, you know, see if they can.
There you go.
Somebody can beat him out in the snow or something like that, right?
Who could build a better snowman than Rusev?
Yes.
All right, why don't you hit the mailbag up?
Okay, Hogan at WrestleMania 18. Okay, we all know the pop he got and the insane pop he got when he hulked up. The question is, did Canadians always love Hogan, or was that just the magic of nostalgia? He was going through some clips on YouTube, and the Hogan hulk up pop at WrestleMania was just insane, unmatched and surpassed by only a few others. Yes, it is fair to say that Hulk Hogan was always very popular in Canada. He always drew huge, obviously, in places he went around here, and I remember being watching closed circuit WrestleMania 5 when he won the title from Savage, and the place went insane for him. But I mean, it was there's a bigger thing with Canada as well, especially around that time with WWF nostalgia in general, where like Hogan was over huge as a babyface, and like the NWO guys were over as babyfaces, just because it's WCW was never really a thing in Canada. Like it was Canada overall was always a big WWF territory, and so, like, you know, Scott Hall was always going to be Razor Ramon to Canadians for the longest time, and Kurt Hennig was always going to be Mr. Perfect, and, you know, Hulk Hogan was always going to be the big babyface star to them. So it's just, you know, bizarro land, as WWE likes to say. It's us Canadians, we just like to be, you know, contrarian about the whole thing, I think.
Is there anyone else that was big locally for you? Like, obviously, besides the obvious ones like Brett and everything. Anyone that always received, like, we always talk about how here in Providence, loved Randy Savage or Bret Hart. No matter what happened, who they were fighting, what company they were in, those are the two guys they always cheered. We saw it at Rumble 94 when everyone booed Luger and cheered for Bret. Those were always two, regardless of when and where, were always just beloved in this town. Did you have anyone else like that, Keith, besides Hogan and the usual Canadians?
I don't know about beloved. I know that Ken Shamrock was always really hated in Canada for whatever reason as well. and it's the weirdest thing. And I don't know if it was because like he was introduced by going up against Owen Hart or and Bret Hart, or like what the deal was exactly. But yeah, like even when he was supposedly a babyface, every time he would come for a host show to you know, one of the Canadian cities, he would just get booed out of the building. And like you saw it at what the hell was the show? Breakdown, the one with the three-way cage match. And like he just got. He just got booed out of the building, and it was like the craziest thing. And I'm not 100% sure what the cause was. And I know all I know is that I was booing him too when he was there. So like, whatever it is about it, Ken Shamrock is very easily hateable by Canadians.
How about you, Scott? How about the Hartford, New Haven area?
I think a lot like you, JR. Love Savage. Love the Hart Foundation. Let me think. Hogan, obviously. Yeah, I would say those. Savage, I think, was just universally loved in the Northeast. When I used to go to my old New Haven Coliseum house shows, he got the biggest pops. Even if, as a heel, he got. There were smatterings of during the Macho King run. He got smatterings of cheers. Brett was liked. Who else? Singles guys. Boss Man used to get pretty good pops in New Haven, Hartford. I remember going to an old house show in like 87, right at the tail end, right before the Savage Steamboat feud kicked in, and Savage had that kind of mini feud with Bruno when Bruno was in the Twilight, and he got crazy pops at the Coliseum. You know, old Italian guy, right in the heart of the little Italy of Connecticut. So he used to get big pops from the fan, because a lot of the older fans would still go to the Coliseum. But kind of like the way you are, JR, in Providence, like Brett and Savage. I think Savage is just universally loved in most of the Northeast.
Yeah.
I think
Savage is a really interesting case, I think, actually, especially because in his early stuff, he was you know, supposed to be a mega heel, right? But he was so popular that they actually had to come up with the Elizabeth storyline to turn him heel, right? Like, because if they'd continued on having to go out there and crush jobbers and looking awesome, he would have turned himself babyface.
And they almost screwed that up too.
Yeah, exactly.
They made Hogan look like the scumbag.
Yeah, that's right. So he would have turned himself, because crowds just like absolutely love the guy, and by having him go out there and, you know, be a total jerk to, you know, the beautiful demure Elizabeth all the time, then finally they found something that could, you know, get people to actually boo him, right? But that was always amazing to me. That was just like,
right.
Like, you know, because everybody just wanted to cheer him so badly. And that's why I think the babyface turn in 88 really, you know, really worked out as well as it did, because this was a guy that everybody just wanted to cheer.
Even as a heel, Scott, did Owen get
oh, yeah, no, Owen,
some love in the mid-90s, even as a heel feuding with Brett?
Oh yeah, no. Owen was always like really cheered in Canada.
How about Keith?
And, like,
no, I'm just kidding. Who got higher Potter Pops? Keith or Bruce?
Yeah,
fucking Bruce.
Yeah.
No. All right.
Even Canadians hate Bruce Hart. But, could be worse. Could be Smith Hart. That guy is a piece of work.
Miserable old. He's the oldest Hart.
Yes, he is.
Hart.
He is. He is all of that. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, back to the mailbag here, I guess. Unless you guys have another one, but
no. Let's hit the next one.
Okay. Okay. Blah 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 blah. Question: what are some really stupid chants that the crowd has gotten started? Whether because they're lame or because they simply aren't true. It could even be a chant that used to have meaning but now has been watered down from overuse. What do you guys think?
You can't wrestle to John Cena.
Yeah, actually, you know what? There was a paragraph about it that was building up to it. I skipped over it to get to the question, but yeah, that's exactly the one that he was. That's exactly the one that the guy was talking about.
That's my number one.
Yeah, that one, the one, it's, I don't know if it's still used very much anymore, the one that got started in Montreal where the crowd would chant two after a two. And it was just like, what are you trying to say? I don't even understand. What is this supposed to be ironic? Is this supposed to be clever? Like, it's like, yes, he counted a two. That's very good. Like,
yes, it was a two count.
It was a two count. That's very observant of you, yes. That's the one I really hate. I don't know, was there any other ones that are really... I can't think of any else at the top of my head, but yeah, the You Can't Wrestle definitely is to John Cena is definitely the one that I would say is that gets on my nerves the most too.
I can't believe when Orndorff was in WCW in like 93, 94, early 95, they were still chanting Paula. I thought that was way outdated. Day late, dollar short with that chant.
Yeah.
WWF burned that chant out in 86, you know.
Remember when Brutus Beefcake was trying to get like Scary Sherry into it, turn that into a thing?
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
That really went over well. Or I guess, or actually a more recent example, like Mr. Ziggles. Example of that one.
Mm.
John Morrison trying to get that one over, but yeah. Those would be ones that would definitely fall into the lame side.
What? That's probably the worst.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
It was good for like a month.
It's okay with Austin because he knows how to deal with it.
Right.
And Undertaker to a certain degree, but it's just like really like it hurts so many more people than it helps, I think, that one. Like it's just these poor guys who go out there and they, you know, they don't have any training on improvising on interviews as it is, and they go out there and just get destroyed by a hostile crowd like that. It's kind of sad actually.
Mm. That's about all I could think of for broken down chance.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah,
let's hit the next one. Right.
Okay, let's see. Okay, so while speaking of Paul Orndorff, I guess we'll hit one of these ones here. Guy was watching the big event, and Hogan and Orndorff seemed to be doing some big business. That's an understatement.
All the chance.
They seem to be doing okay, those guys.
Yeah, they're doing okay for themselves. Aside from
I'll tell you that Hogan Andre match seemed to be okay. Seems to do okay, that one.
Seems to do okay, yeah, exactly.
Well.
Okay, so question number one. If he happened to love WrestleMania 2 and the idea behind it, and he understands that WrestleMania was becoming an inevitable annual theme, but was the big event a bigger financial success than WrestleMania 2 due to cost? If so, then obviously the Orndorff program was outdrawing the Bundy angle. Well, no shit, yeah.
Right, yeah.
and does an Orndorff main event make WrestleMania 2 bigger than the big event?
No.
Nah, I don't know about that. There was a lot of stuff going on against WrestleMania 2 there.
Yeah, I don't think the main event was really the problem with that show.
Yeah, there was a lot of other stuff going on there, for sure. But yeah, no, big event drew a shitload of money, that's for sure. They drew a legit like 65,000 people to Toronto for that. And that was a big deal. It was a pretty good show, actually, I have to say. I mean, for the constraints of the time and...
Right.
You know, and everything.
Well, even like that Machines match is kind of fun. That was like a big deal. It's the only time the Machines really got any kind of major show for them.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it blows my mind with Orndorff. He was making like, you know, $10,000 a week.
He made $800,000 that night.
Yeah.
$64,100.
That is a big gate. Yes.
Yeah. Killer Bees against the Funks. Don Morocco. Ooh, I forgot about this match. Remember, JR? Morocco, Haku, the 15-minute draw?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That wasn't half bad. Anything with Ted Arcidi. Tony Garea. JYD Adonis. Dick Slater, Iron Mike Sharp. Bundy, Stud, Bobby.
That was before JYD Adonis was a feud, too. Like, that was a year before the
evening. Yeah, yeah. Bundy, Stud, and Bobby against Captain Lou and the Machines. Mm-hmm. Steamboat Jake and that's Snake Pit match where he comes out with the dragon. That's on a couple of DVDs. I think it's on Jake's DVD.
Yeah.
Billy Jack Haynes Hercules. Wow, a whole 9 months before they WrestleMania 3. The Rougeaus against the Dream Team when the Rougeaus were faces. Harley Pedro and then Hogan Orndorff.
I know. I got to go back and watch that show again. Actually, it's some short matches, but it's a hell of a deal actually, and there's some interesting stuff.
If you watch the show, and you can read along with Scott and Justin's Vintage Vault Refresh.
How about that? Yeah, that's great.
You know what's good about that show, Scott? The camera angles. I remember just they made CNE Stadium look like 3 million people were in it. I mean, that was kind of like when you said on your. I remember so vividly reading your WrestleMania 17 review. When you first, the first line you wrote was, and my God, the Astrodome looks massive. And the camera shots for that show remind me a lot of this one. Like, they made CNE Stadium. And what is that seat? Was that a sellout? Does that seat
that was definitely a sellout. Like,
oh, okay. Okay.
60,000. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was an outdoor stadium, too. So that was a tricky shoot as well. Like, so yeah, that was big kudos to WWF guys for, they used to, and like, they used to be their specialty. They used to be able to make those kind of places look huge. Mm. And you know, now in like the Kevin Dunn era, where everything is like, you know, the same place over and over again with the same settings and the same backdrops and everything. Like,
right.
It's like, you know, there's no creativity to it anymore.
No. All right, I got about a handful here. We're gonna hit, and then we'll start to wrap up. So here are some of the better ones from this thread. Kevin Bowers, I've recently started collecting action figures again. What is your favorite wrestling figure line? LJN, Hasbro, Jax, Mattel, etc. Layup for me, because I pretty much have them all, and that's the Hasbros. I still have all my old ones, the little plastic ones. I had matches galore, notebooks filled, music tapes, Lego wrestling carts that they rode down to the ring, and I had it all. And play with them every night for a long time. Some of my favorite toys ever. So there were some really cool ones in the mix there. How about you, Keith? What's your favorite set of toys?
Well, clearly I'm older than you, because I had the full set of LJN ones before that. I started with... With a Randy Savage and a Ricky Steamboat that I got when I was about 13 years old, and my friends and I had a whole wrestling league that we put together with all of them, and I ended up with something like 200 of them, and then gave them all away to one of my younger cousins when I was going to university, and I've regretted it ever since. I had a massive collection of classic stuff that I could have sold on eBay for a ton of money, unfortunately. But
if only we knew at the time.
Yeah, well, but I mean, like, you know, they weren't really good as wrestling figures or anything like that, right? I mean, like, you know, they're just giant hunks of plastic, basically, that were, you know, like, trying to, you know, what can you do with, like, the Ted DiBiase one with his, you know, where he's holding up a wad of cash, and it's like, well, you can't work a decent match where
you mean the rubber guys, right?
Is there the rubber guys.
The Hasbros were set up a little bit more to compete with.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was only, like, I mean, I was like you, Keith, Scott, I had a myriad of the rubber guys, and... There was maybe like four rubber guys that were probably workable. Hogan.
Yeah.
Savage, kind of.
Kind of. He was good for dropping the elbow. Orndorff was pretty good. I thought he was in a pretty...
Valentine wasn't bad. Ricky
Steamboat was in chopping protection, right? And so he was...
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
My favorite one, though, and I never did anything with it because I didn't want the paint to chip, was Jesse's. Jesse had those sweet pink tights with the blue boots, and I never wanted to like lose the, so I never used him in my matches because I was always afraid of his, like my Roddy Piper, the Hot Rod t-shirts was completely gone within like a month because I used to use him all the time. Orndorff was a pretty good one. They didn't really get the concept of being able to use the guys when they made them at that time. You know, my Hogan ones, the one of the legs peeled. I used it so much that the leg came loose.
But I had bought a second doink because my first one, the head got loose and it spun around, so I was able to do the double doink. It was tough throwing that either.
Nice.
What about the awful WCW Galoob figures? Remember those guys? They had like the worst poses. I remember one, was it Pillman or Zenk? It had like his hands up, like he was doing like a high 10, and like, I was like, what are you going to do with that? It was like just hands straight up.
I had a vibrating Chris Benoit, actually.
That does not surprise me in any way. Scott Keith and his Chris Benoit vibrator.
That's right. They had some interesting ones, that's for sure. But
I had a great AWA 2-pack. It was it was two strange guys. Rick Martel, so this is like 85, I think. So I was like 12.
The Mego ones, you mean?
Like, yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was Martell and Baron von Raschke. It's a strange combination. Mm-hmm. But
there was a Ric Flair one from the AWA line, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, there was. There is one. Yeah, very rare, actually.
Yeah.
I remember there was a rare, getting back to the rubber guys real quick, there were three Andres. There was long hair babyface Andre with blue tights, short hair babyface Andre, which came with his own bag of hair. I don't know why, to go along with like the whole storyline. And then the heel one strap, which was at the very end when they ended the line.
So there for those guys too, I always liked the tag team ones because they came with tag team belts, which was,
yes, they did.
Nice, yep. Right? You know, because you get some belts to use for the.
That's right.
Like, although really, like, you know, putting the Killer Bees with tag team belts was just like, I mean, come on. I was like 12 years old, and I was like, come on, who are you kidding?
Not gonna happen. All right, we got about 10 more minutes, so let's hit a couple more here. If you take out the obvious, and this is good for you, Keith, because you've been really watching this time period recently. Take out the obvious four: Diesel, Razor, Shawn, and Brett. Who is the next name that defines the new generation era? What words, in other words, what name or names help define the era? That's from Justin Pratt.
Okay, so like 95 WWF kind of thing?
Yeah, 94. New generation's usually, what, 94 to early 96, we'll call it?
Yeah. Bam Bam Bigelow was on a pretty good trajectory before he got his legs cut out from underneath him by the Click, mm-hmm. I have to say. So he was, like, he's kind of a guy you think about in there and, like, doing with his big baby face run because he was, you know, he was up on top. Lex Luger, obviously.
How about Owen? I think Owen's a good one.
Owen's a good one. I think if those guys weren't around, I think some like your Lugers and your Owens would have been the ones that were ended up on top. I mean, I think Luger would have ended up on top a lot sooner if not for not for Brett and you know, coming out and siphoning all his heat off, you know, that bastard.
Okay. IRS.
IRS. Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, defining name. Actually, I would like to throw in a plug actually for for a book I've been reading as of late, James Dixon's Titan Sinking, which is it's available on Amazon and Kindle, and it's all about the fall of WWF in 1995 and all the cool stuff going on backstage that a lot of it I hadn't heard about, like they actually interviewed the one Marine who was the one who beat up Shawn Michaels, who was supposedly 15 guys, right? Like it was actually only one guy, and he was also talking about the, which I hadn't heard too much about before, the feud in the back between the Click and the Bone Crew, mm-hmm. with Undertaker and Yokozuna I hadn't actually heard about that aspect of it before. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there, and he does a really good job of researching everything and presenting it kind of as one long narrative for the year. So it's well worth your $5 to go on Amazon and pick it up on Kindle.
I'll have to check it out. I saw him posting, I think, on your blog, so I want to actually reach out to him because I'd like to have him on the show to talk about the book, so we'll have to do that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book, and yes, highly recommend.
It's a cool year to talk about because everyone always craps on it for how bad it was, but there was a lot of interesting stuff going on. And a lot of interesting decisions that went into the booking, like we've talked about before. They leave guys off left and right from pay-per-views and have them in dark matches and Coliseum exclusives and everything else. Some odd decisions just across the board where it seemed like they actually had the talent to have a good year, but they just didn't really use it that well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like watching, for instance, like knowing what we know now about Shane Douglas and what was going on with him behind the scenes and watching him trying to get that character over and the way that WWF was fighting against him every step of the way. And just, it's, like I said, it adds a extra level of interest, but I mean, you know, the shows are just so terribly boring to watch. And yeah, that's the only thing. If only it was a better product they were putting out, it'd be even more interesting, but it's just a bunch of people who have given up basically. And you can tell like they've given up fighting against the Click, and obviously it's the Shawn and Diesel show all over the place.
All right, sticking in that time frame, would Razor Ramon have been a better choice for a WWF title reign that went to Diesel?
Probably not at that time period. One of the interesting things brought up in the book, actually, which I had known about, was that they had actually shot vignettes for a Razor Ramon Undertaker match at WrestleMania 11.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was supposed to be coming out of the Royal Rumble that Razor was going to turn heel, and they actually shot one thing with Undertaker chokeslamming him into an open grave. And then Vince, in classic Vince mode, changed his mind and decided to go with King Kong Bundy instead because he suddenly was in love with King Kong Bundy. And I think that would have been an interesting direction that actually would have – that might have propelled Ramon actually to kind of get up to the top again.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like a heel Ramon going against Diesel for the WWF title at SummerSlam. And that would have been a place where they might have actually been tempted to pull the trigger and take the title off Diesel, I think.
Maybe Razor would have won King of the Ring instead of Mabel.
And maybe stuck around. That would have been really cool. Especially if they filmed that thing. Yeah, that sounds great. Choke slams in the open grave and everything. That would have been really cool. Too bad they didn't go with that. Would have been much better than what we got.
That's true.
All right. Here's a quick one. We can go around the table with Scott. We'll start with you. Best authority figure character. And I know it's a trope that's really just beat into the ground nowadays. But all time, though, who's your favorite? Or who are a couple of the best?
Well, Vince, obviously.
All right, I say non Vince division.
Non Vince, okay. Teddy Long, GM of SmackDown, he was solid.
I think Bischoff's my favorite. Both on Raw and a little bit of WCW, mainly Raw. I really liked him as Raw GM. What do you think, Keith? Who's a couple of your favorites?
I gotta go old school and say Jack Tunney, just because he was a guy who gave off the authority thing without people having to tell, you know, constantly reinforce all the time. Like, you know, he showed up, he made a decision, then he went back off to Toronto to go drinking and gambling again. So.
Siphoning his brother's promotions money.
Right, exactly, yes.
What were your feelings on Bischoff when he was on Raw?
It was a total wasted opportunity, I think. But I mean, he grew on me, like, you know, like he had a certain goofy charm to him after a while.
Such a sleaze.
He was such a sleaze, exactly.
It's made it work. Okay.
Although if I have to see that interview with him again, shot 2002.
I know, up in the
with the big bars and tone in the background on the Raw screen. Oh God, wore that thing into the ground.
All right, last question, non wrestling, and then we'll wrap things up here from Ben Morse. What upcoming comic book movies are Scott and Scott most excited for? And then he asks if I even watch movies. I do watch movies. I don't watch comic book movies as much. I'm looking forward to Dumb and Dumber, which I'm going to see actually on Friday nights. First time I've gone to the movies in a long time. But Scott and Scott, let you guys talk a couple minutes here on comic book movies, and then we'll wrap up. So what are some of the ones you're looking forward to?
I'm definitely looking forward to Age of Ultron, Avengers 2.
Captain America.
I know they're doing a third Cap. That'll be kind of cool.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not really pumped for the whole DC slate that they've announced so far. I mean, I don't know. I think they're kind of getting ahead of themselves and assuming that Batman Superman is going to be like a giant hit, for example. But I think actually Shazam with The Rock has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too.
I mean, if it actually does come out, I think that'd be a really fun one. And Avengers 2 obviously is the big one. Cap 3 is the other one. I don't think they're doing another Iron Man, but. I'm on the fence about Ant-Man because I was really on board with it when it was the Edgar Wright version of it. But now that it's just kind of becoming like generic Marvel superhero movie, I'm not so sure about it. But
honestly for me, I'm between now and next December, so over a year from now, I'm just too tunnel visioned on Episode 7. That's just me because that's just the Star Wars junkie in me. I'm just so tunnel visioned on next December 18th, which is when Episode 7 comes out.
What? There's another Star Wars movie coming out? What?
Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, the news didn't make it up there yet?
Oh, jeez. Why didn't somebody tell us about that?
What's Star Wars?
Yeah, what is that?
A long time ago, in a country far, far away.
Are you a Dumb and Dumber guy, Keith?
Oh, yeah. I'm pumped for it.
Yeah.
You bet. I am too, actually.
You think it'll be good?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be good. It just has to be funny.
True.
Because you can have both.
Exactly. Well, you know.
Also looking forward to, I don't know if I'll get to see it. It's just tough right now to get out, but... I would like to see Horrible Bosses, too. I enjoyed the first one quite a bit. I think the second one will be very good. They have a good cast, strong cast, which I think will overcome the fact that it's a sequel that doesn't make sense. So,
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too. I love the first one.
All right, why don't we go to wrap up? This is a lot of fun, as always, guys, hitting the mailbag. Keith, we'll have to do this again very soon. Again, thank you so much for your support. Anything you want to plug?
No, just the usual. My website at rspwfaq.com. I'm also, of course, doing four columns a month for the Sporting News at sportingnews.com on various wrestling-related things. For instance, Grumpy Cat hosting Raw. I put a column up on that today because that was a real press release that I got in my mailbox. So there you go. Those are my two main things. So everybody head to the blog. There's live discussion on Raw that will be done by the time you read this.
All right, and Scott, we'll be back separately Wednesday night. You have a main event. Who's your roundtable this week?
Well, we're going to have the Core 4 and Plus 1 for the first time ever, a five-man rotation, because Dr. G from the Extra Point will be joining us because we will be fixing, actually, we talked about earlier tonight, fixing the network.
Very good.
So break that down. What will be on the Kevin Kelly Show?
Well, we actually have a couple guests. We have the ring announcer for Ring of Honor. Bobby Cruz will be joining us for a chat. And also R.D. Evans from Ring of Honor. And Chikara will be joining us as well. I'm sure we'll talk about the other news of the day going around on the Kevin Kelly Show. So check both those things out. Next week, a little unsettled at the moment. We'll definitely be here with Unforgiven 03 on Tuesday. Next week, no Monday show. And then the second show that next week is a little up in the air right now. We'll see what's going on. So stay tuned to the PTBN Network for all your updates, syndicated network. So, all right, we're out. For Scott Keith, Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you Wednesday night. Everyone, make sure you come in and vote. Greatest song of the 90s. Otherwise, take care. We'll talk to you then.
Hey, Scott, in case this news didn't make it to Canada, Sean and Brett made up.
What? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, just let you know.
Always the last to know.
Now Grumpy Cat will go eat out of his Triple H cat dish.
Not using mine. Fine about Judy round the corner in the park, flipping like a dipstick, hip to the news, practicing the rain, mellow in the blues. Jack rolls the coffin and swift like a skate. Yo, Jody, yo, gotta go, got a date. Padlock, Jody screaming, wait, 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 don't worry, hun. He replies, I'm keeping the faith. The baseball with you again, yo. I never do the baseball with you, cause your hoochie coo is so smooth. Isn't such a sin to let me in? Hooked by your ever so shyness, don't get bush. Heard you from Flatbush, ran after you, caught you. Too Long Island styling for a while. In my hut, I was on a cut for a peck. A silly Greg Peck, you try to play me new, plug when you disconnect. I try to touch your hair, you would say no. Yo, I try to touch your hair, you would say no. Is it cause you want my financial flunk? First you gotta please me, nice and easy. But I guess you want that imp reverse, so I stand plug first to see. We got a serious block, turn the other way. Ooh, what do I spot? A hoopin' hey love who sent, left a trace, had a stash of Apache with a body that's safe. All to the A, now you wanna swing, forget the rap, yo black sheep sing. Your band, your band, your band, honey dip, your band, your band. Your band. Yo, your band by the preacher man. You played yourself a stool, not a me a step. Never mind, love, the faith of being kept. Now, remember my padlock, Tony, here's the fact. Jack Little Whip, but she was acting whack. Wanna lay, but laying ain't exact, cause the past 4 or 5 she was laying by the pack. Hip to the witness, putting on a plan. No money, no more putty cat for the man. Jack knows the honey rings playing a game. Woman wanna bowl, got man for the fame. God dang, bang. Sam is the man that you plan to command. Nothing new about a neighborhood. You know what? Padlock Jody wanna cut. Jack thinking cat ain't minor to attack. Yo, here's 20, 40, 60, pay me back. Conscience appears, yo, Jack, what you doing? You play the cold while honey is cooling. You don't have to if you don't want to. You don't have to if you don't want to. So he begins with the ring, ring, ring. Hey, Judy girl, how you doing? Seen you with another man, what you doing? Screwing through, shame on you. What you can't wait for the big bait. Well, I'ma tell you straight, honey child, I'm keeping a faith. We'll be right back.